All right, welcome back to the I'm Your Podcast. I'm your host, Freeway, and I'm here with my co-host, Kenny.
Invincible.
Yes, and today we are doing Invincible Season 2, the first four episodes, because these have been out for a while. And from what I understand, they just released the next batch of four to conclude the season, but we haven't watched those yet. At least I haven't. Have you?
No, it's funny because when we initially were like, we're not going to watch Season 2 at all until Part 2 is out so we can watch it all and do a podcast. And then in between that time, we changed our format for reviewing shows anyway.
Yeah.
So we could have just done Part 1 of Season 2. Anyway. Yep. So anyway, that's what we're doing here. That's what we're here doing. I have not seen Season 2, Part 2 yet. I saw Season 2, Part 1 a couple weeks ago. I don't remember when.
Oh, wow. You've seen it for a while now.
Yeah. I had to watch a recap video because I just had it. It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen Part 2 yet. And yeah, here we are. We're doing so, it. I think it's funny, though.
Go ahead.
Real quick, because I did it right here when you said, like, when you introduced me and I said Invincible. I did laugh and chuckle at all through episode 1 of Season 2. They, like, teased the thing they did in Season 1 that was kind of cheesy, where, like, something would happen and they would be like, he is Invincible. And it would, like, show the Invincible.
That would be the
thing,
intro, which they, like, I actually like that.
Yeah, they, like, teased that all through Season 2, Part 1 or episode 1 a bunch, where, like, they would set it up where, like, it felt like they were going to do, like, the Invincible thing. And then, like, they would just say, like, he is Invincible.
They would actually say it. So yeah, this season I think is amazing already. This show's really good. Like, I know Season 1 was really good, but I think that this show is fucking phenomenal. The way it started, it was so wild when Season 2 opened up, because I'm sitting there like, how the fuck is this not a dream sequence? The entire opening where it's Invincible Mark Grayson fighting against the Immortal, and I wondered at first if they were sparring or training of some sort. I was like, there's no way they're fighting for real. But then some of the comments that were being made were just like a little harsh coming from Immortal. Like, you're just like your father and all this other stuff. And I'm like, that's
when I was
up.
Watching it at that point, I was just like, I thought, you know, we're all in the normal reality. I didn't think it was a dream at the time. I was like, damn, I was like, I don't know what's going on. I'm sure they'll explain it. I thought they were just rumbling, sparring, training, whatever it may be. I did have like a guess that it was like, after I started seeing Omni-Man and shit going down, I was like, oh, this has to be like another reality.
I did not think okay, so can I just say, I'm over the multiverse thing, period. Like, I'm over it. Everybody's trying to do it. Yeah. I'm scared that the boys are going to do their own version of it. I don't like it. I'm done with that. Like, probably. It failed for Marvel. If people don't know, Marvel is fucking trash now. Like, it's been trash for years. They've given up on this whole, like, multiverse nonsense. The Kang the Conqueror villain, I think, is being scrapped because of what happened with Jonathan Majors. I'm just not into the multiverse stuff. It doesn't hit for me the same.
Yeah, for me, it depends on how it's executed. Here, I have my ups and downs with it that we'll get into. But yeah, as soon as I saw Invincible and Omni-Man like together, I was like, oh, this is another reality. I was like, this is a multiverse.
See, that's so specific. I just thought it was a dream sequence. I was like, he's having a dream. Somebody's having a dream. And
I don't know what's worse. Because if me, I have a really hard time giving a flying fuck about dreams. See, as soon as I know what I'm watching isn't real, like it's a dream or whatever, I like lose almost all interest in like what I'm looking at. You know what I mean?
Because I'm
happy it wasn't a dream.
I think dream sequences are really good for foreshadowing though, because that's what they often are used for in the medium of videos. Like, anytime you have a story being told, even think about Kingdom Hearts and all the fucking dreams and bullshit that goes on in that story, which you love. Like, dreams are used to like tell the story in a way. So I don't know. I just thought that it would be like a foreshadowing of a world that could be, and not literally another multiverse bullshit thing. Another that's just that like is. I don't know. I'm just
with everything. With everything, it's nuance and execution with dream sequences or multiverses. I will say in this multiverse. Anyway, I will say
they just got fucking random shots. But not the multiverses for flopping like every other platform fighter does after 6 months.
I will say, man. Anyway, for this so far, the multiverse thing. So initial impressions, you're not the biggest fan of it.
It's just that immediately. So this is as soon as I realized that, oh, this isn't a dream at all. This is just Omni-Man and Invincible in a different verse. In my mind, I started to lose interest so quick of this season. Like, because I thought that the whole season, thank God it wasn't. I thought the whole season was going to be this shit where they're recruiting people from this other verse. Like, they're recruiting other...
That would have been pretty whack.
And I think that might still happen. Don't get me wrong, because they showed it for a reason. The whole, like, what is his name? Angstrom Levi?
Angstrom, yeah.
Yeah, I think that will still play out.
I've got things to say about him.
I do think this about Invincible, though. I love that all of the little weird storylines that they develop throughout the seasons, they all get like more development as the show goes. And I think that is fucking brilliant writing. I genuinely love, like, even the thing with the Donald Ferguson guy who died in season one. We saw him get his spinal cord fucking shattered by Omni-Man and then also get blown up. And then there's like this weird thing this season where he's alive again and Debbie's looking at him like, what the fuck? Like, I swear this guy died. And then there's like other little things like the Sequits from season one that we talked about in the podcast a lot. They are big. Well, one of them is a big part of this during the season. I just like that about this show. But the multiverse thing just freaked me out. And I was like, God, please don't let this be another Marvel thing where I just have to like, oh, this is Mark from World 636. And this is Mark from like 718. And I'm just not a fan. And like all the different Kang the Conquerors. I was like, is there going to be a bunch of different Omni-Mans? Maybe one of them is good. And like, I don't know. I'm just
one of them is good. It's the one that we have.
Yeah. Our Omni-Man is actually good. Yes, that is good. How that works.
Good is a spectrum.
Good is a spectrum. Let's keep it a buck. Good is a spectrum. It sounded like you wanted to say something about something I said earlier or a second ago.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff to talk about.
There's so much to talk about. We're at the very beginning of this.
So one of the things, just as you brought it up, the Sequid thing, I need the Guardians of the Globe to not be slow.
Oh, okay? There's so many slow moments in this season, Kenny.
I'm like, why are we letting this guy live here? Like, when he showed up to the Guardians and like, I guess, joined them, I was like, why are we letting this happen?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm not trusting any, like, regardless of the fact that I have hindsight and I know what I'm looking at. If I'm a superhero and some guy is strutting on a treadmill backwards and the treadmill's not on,
when he started jerking on the treadmill, when he started doing it, teaching me how to jerk on the treadmill backwards, Kenny, I lost it. I genuinely found myself laughing at this season because he came and it was like, hey, do you have a place that I can run stationarily? I was just like, what? Like, what do you mean? Can you run stationarily? Like, what do you, this, yo, the way he speaks is so unhinged to me. Like, I think that this shit is so funny because they even look at him like he's not, like, he's unserious. He's so fucking unserious. But I don't know. I think it's very slow that they're allowing him to get this close to the team without just shooting him in the fucking head. Like, why is he not getting a bullet to the head?
Like, here's the thing. You are correct. They also look at him like, this guy can't be serious, right? So they recognize that what they're looking
like
at
is something
crazy.
Is wrong.
But then they let him stay in the Justice League headquarters.
They were like,
bro.
It's like, where'd you come from? He was like, I am a regular superhero who has a really dark and traumatic childhood and upbringing. I got my superpowers from a mechanical explosion. I was like, put a bullet in his hand right now. Put him in cuffs. throw him in
put
Arkham.
Put him down.
Put him down. Horse tranquilize him right now. He should have been tackled to the ground and straightjacketed. The second he said, I have a very normal origin story, I would have been like, tackle him now. Like,
he needs to be in Cecil's lab, locked up. Yes. Like, that's where he needs to be.
He is fucking unhinged the way he speaks. Every scene with him is gold. Like, I love it. Yo, when the director dude came into the bathroom and he was in there like fucking pulling on the thing that you get like paper towels from, he just kept pulling them and throwing them and pulling them and throwing them and pulling them and throwing them. Bro, I don't know who writes the comedy for this show, but it is so good. It reminds me of when Marvel's comedy used to be good before it got really cringe. Like, it's very funny. I find it very, very funny.
He was Shape Smith, I think his
his name when he's you know, as a appearing as a humanoid person. But he was watching TV the one day and he sees the Martian Manhunter ripoff dude.
Yep.
And he gets all inspired by him and like his abilities and stuff. And I thought that was really cool. Like, he seems like a kid in whatever species he is. He seems young.
It is interesting because, as far as I know, and unless I'm completely misunderstanding something, that is like the Sequid thing that they said was like this evil thing that's going to take over the fucking world.
Yep.
As far as I know, that's the Sequid taking over this person's body and then has these powers or whatever. Unless I missed something.
So that's what I was thinking too. And I'm glad you brought this up because I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, did I miss the part where they're not actually like these evil creatures that are trying to take over? Because this guy seems harmless outside of being deranged. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he seems
really silly and
just like he needs to be around people longer to assimilate,
but he does know how to lie, which because like the fact that he said like I'm a completely normal person who the fact that he knows how to lie is interesting.
He's trying to lie and
knows that
his lies are ridiculous, but they're like
he's not good at it.
They're like a kid, you know when kids think they're smarter than you and they start telling you bad, like when your little brother, you're like, Jaden, did you open his box of cereal? He's like, no. But it's like blatantly cereal crumbs all over his fucking diaper.
Like, hey, Did you? And then you look at it and like all the marshmallows and Lucky Charms are gone. It's just like not charms.
And then he happens to have like, a stomach ache.
Yeah. It's like, well, what happened here?
It's like, that's the second. So I think that they are the same storyline.
But yeah, it's interesting that he knows that he should lie, not that he's good at it. So yeah, I don't know what's going on there exactly. But at the moment, he seems kind of silly. But all of that said, he should be in a straight jacket and fall over
strange. 100% tackled, gun to the head, like no question. I think that storyline's amazing because it's funny. It's so funny. And it's so unhinged. And the way they look at him, I just think is brilliant. I love that in this season, all of the Guardians of the Globe, it's weird. They killed them in the first episode, and you didn't really get to see much of them and their natural habitat, how their family life was. This season is giving you backstory on like all of them in a way. And I love that. I actually really enjoy finding out about the Guardians of the Globe now. Like you have the one storyline with like the Aquaman ripoff dude. So Cecil told Mark that he had to go down into the depths of Atlantis and marry some fucking like princess of the sea, some queen of the sea. He gets down there and it's like, yeah, we did away with that barbaric ass tradition. That's not really a thing that we do. And so he was lying. I guess Cecil just lied.
Cecil, to my knowledge, I think Cecil knew. I think they lied to Cecil.
Oh.
I think they lied to Cecil because Cecil was confused because later in the episode when Mark like contacts Cecil or whatever, but when Cecil finds out that Mark is fighting a fucking Godzilla
I call
thing,
it Abyss Dweller. Like, yeah.
Yeah, when he found out that he was fighting Abyss Dweller, when he finds out, he's like about to send some, he's like, this wasn't the agreement. Like, right. I'm going to send help. And then Mark is like, no, I'll take care of it. But when he found out, he was like, this isn't what's supposed to be happening. In Cecil's mind, as far as I can tell, Mark wasn't supposed to be in like any actual danger.
Yeah. I guess I kind of like missed that little part where Cecil was also tricked because this season has a lot of fuckery and trickery with Mark and being lied to.
Mm-hmm.
Like it happens multiple times in just four episodes where he's told one thing, he gets to the place and it's like, this is not actually at all what you were summoned here for. So that kind of caught me off guard, but I did like, I like that. I like the finding out. So there's another slow moment in the season that I think is also kind of funny because I laughed at it, but I thought it was so bad. Like I thought it was so bad. So Debbie, Nolan's wife, Mark's mom, she goes to this support group for people who for people who have been involved with superheroes, like their spouses, essentially. And most of them, you know, Guardians of the Globe, husbands and wives are dead. Like most of their superhero spouses are just straight up dead, right? Because of Omni-Man. She meets this one guy who's like really nice to her and a sweetheart. And he starts trying to get close to her and stuff like that. They go out to a dive bar. They have this conversation and he reveals that his wife was one of the Guardians of the Globe. And then she immediately realizes, oh God, my husband killed your wife, but she doesn't say it. And then like she leaves because she's really emotional and he finds her in some back alleyway. And she kind of reveals like, yeah, my husband was Omni-Man and he is responsible for killing all the Guardians of the Globe and, you know, all this other stuff. And the guy 180 just turns into psycho. I don't know how else to describe it, Kenny. This guy turns fucking psycho, bro. He's like, how did you not know? She's like, I didn't fucking know he hid it from me from 20 years. He was like, you should have known. I was like, what the fuck does that mean? When he said you should have known, I wanted to cut my fucking Amazon subscription off. I wanted to just cancel Amazon immediately. That whoever wrote that, terrible, terrible. Oh, you should have known. It's so bad.
That was nonsense. It was all nonsense.
It was so bad. The writing for that particular part where he just like, he's blatantly flirting with her the entire episode, getting close to her,
full fucking psycho mode on her. He really does like snap on her. And it's like
unhinged.
I get you're upset that your wife is dead. And like, this is, but like, what the fuck was this human woman going to do? Like, what was she going to do?
She can do exactly as much as you could have done. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, be fucking for real. It was so unhinged the way he reacted to her revealing that, like, yeah, Omni-Man was my husband and he called me a pet, which the whole world heard that part. So, like, I'm just as fucked as you all are.
Call me a pet. Do you realize he called me a fucking pet? Like, what was I? Like, it's got to be horrible. It's like getting mad at the mom or the brother or whoever of, like, a serial killer.
Right.
Like, what the fuck were they going to do? Like, they didn't know.
Especially when they genuinely didn't know. Now, there are some I think, like, you know, there's always, they leave the manifesto where there are certain weird things the kid does that you should be alarmed about and you should probably be looking into, and you're just being kind of like a willfully ignorant is what I call it.
But if legit, you just don't know that this is happening.
Like, Nolan had a whole secret life you know, outside of Debbie and everything, like his real world that he came from is very violent and mm-hmm. oppressive. And she had no fucking idea that he was like that or that he came from that. Cause he's technically the one that she got. He isn't like that. Right. Like
yeah.
he isn't this horrible person that most Viltrumites are awful, by the way.
They are not okay.
Like in this season, we got to see. So when Nolan told the story about where he truly comes from in season one, he's like, you know, what I told you was true, except I left out the part where like, we're kind of murderous. We got to see it from his perspective, and he's already kind of a liar, technically, by omission.
Mm-hmm.
This season, you get to actually see how Viltrumites are, and they are just so aggressively violent. Like,
yes,
they resort to violence as their first instinct, as opposed to...
Oh, yeah, no, there's no talking. There's no talking.
I think Alan made a comment about, like, normally you guys, you know... what did I say? Like, shoot first, ask questions later. He's like, you guys are like, shoot first, ask questions never.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what Alan mm-hmm. said as like, you know, he was mocking them. But there's multiple parts where during the season, I'm like, God damn, the Viltrumites, they're worse than even Omni-Man kind of explained it. Like, they're awful, awful, awful species.
No, they're fucking bad news. I will say on that note, just because we're talking a little bit about it. The one girl, I fucking love her hair and the way she uses her hair. I just like she has like her hair, like if I remember correctly, it's long.
It's a
braided,
very long braid. Yeah.
And it's like around her neck, almost like a scarf. And then also like sitting on her shoulder.
Yep.
And then she like uses it as
a
weapon.
At the end of it is a blade.
Spear. Yeah. Yeah. There's like a blade at the end of her braid. And bro, I was all in on it. I was like, she is
I knew
they're all
I saw
horrible
her.
People. Horrible people. But I was like, she is fucking cool as hell.
I think that she's very, very cool. I think that a lot of the designs are actually dope. Like, genuinely, I do think that General Craig, I think was his name, the guy who came at the very end and told Invincible what his new mission would be, that essentially, you're taking over where your dad failed. Like, you will now be the one who has to conquer Earth. I like them a lot. I think that the girl, like you said, she's the best design because her hair braid with the blade on it and the way she was using it against him, slicing this man up and shit. Really, really dope. Viltrumites, when they saw... Okay, because we're going to just be jumping around all around these first four episodes.
Oh,
we're
not going
in any particular order. We're just talking about things that happened.
Talking about season two, part one. Four episodes.
Yep. So we're all over the place. Order. When Alan goes to the Council of Planets, the Planetary, whatever...
It's my favorite episode, by the way. I loved it. Episode three.
Okay.
The Alan episode. Like, the episode starts off with, like...
Oh, yeah, it explains his backstory.
Like, yeah, it starts off with, like, Mark and his girl, like, having sex. And then, like... And then they're like, anyway, over here. And then it's, like, the whole episode is on Alan the alien. And in that one episode,
that made me
a fucking fan. Like, I really like that episode.
I do. You know what? I do like that episode a lot because that episode has one of the best endings. The cliffhanger for that episode was insane.
Mm.
But that episode... The cliffhanger for that one just caught me off guard. I was like, wait, what? So... The episode starts off, like you said, Mark loses his virginity to his girlfriend, Amber, or whatever. Like, they have sex. They're in college. This is, like, typical college behavior. You know, you have complete freedom. They have condoms and all that stuff. And then she's worried about, will you crush me by accident? These are questions that we really do think about, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always used to make fun of Goku and Chi-Chi when I was a kid. Like, how did he actually have sex with her? Because there are filler episodes of Dragon Ball Z where, like, he would interact with Chi-Chi. And he would accidentally... touch her and knock her through a fucking house. Like, you remember that?
Yeah. Goku's OD. It's definitely a joke. Everybody, anyone that's in the Dragon Ball Z and then eventually grew up and hit puberty has thought, how in the world did Bulma and Chi-Chi take dick from Goku and Vegeta?
Right.
Like, how the hell did they do that?
Yeah, because I know that they can lower their power level and stuff like that, but it's always one of those things that you think, he literally put his hand on her shoulder one time in an episode, and, like, she flew through the house and flew through, like, trees and shit. So naturally, you're like, well, a thrust is gonna fucking, like, you know, rip her to shreds or some shit. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I always thought that was funny. So it's interesting that Invincible kind of addressed that. And I love how Invincible has this really grounded kind of conversation thing that they do. Like, a lot of the conversations just seem very, very human, like very normal conversations.
Because they take, you know, it is a play on the superhero. Like, it's a superhero story while also being, like, I don't know, a take on it, I guess.
Yeah, like a teenager coming of age story, too.
Yeah. And it's able to be a superhero story that we all know. But then because it's not scared, they'll also just be an adult show.
Yep.
It shows us, like, real things that you would really think, like how the hell do they have sex? Like how did Omni-Man have sex with,
right?
I forget the mom's name.
Debbie.
You know what I mean? But, like, Debbie, how did he do that? Because I don't know how much he can regulate his power in the way that, like, Saiyans can.
Right.
Like, I don't know how much he can regulate his power. And so, like, how the hell did he, like, do they just have to have a rule where, like, she's always on top. Like, he just has to lay there.
Well, that's what Amber's thing was. Yeah, I'm going to get on top, because she didn't trust him. Yeah. She was like, I have to do, you know, I have to do it myself because I don't trust you if you get too excited. And that makes sense, especially for a virgin. Like, mm-hmm. Mark's never been in no cat before. He don't know what he's about to experience. So you don't want his first time to be in some cat be you. And then he gets too excited and accidentally, like, you know, he might ejaculate and it might go through your fucking skull and kill you like a bullet. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to find, but he, you know what's funny? There's also like this subtle innuendo about masturbation in there too, because she asked him about his semen and he's like, I think it's normal, last I checked. And I was like, oh shit. Like, obviously, you know, he's a teenage boy. He's definitely masturbated before. So I thought that was really funny that, like, he was like, I think it's fine. Like, from what I remember, like, it's fine. And then he kind of looked up in the air for a second. Like, wait, is it fine? Like, I think it's regular, but he's only been a superhero for a little while. Like, technically like 7 months or some shit.
Yeah. It hasn't been long. Less than a year.
Yeah. Less than a year for sure. Cause we know that 6 months have passed since, the end of season one, basically, like, where, mm-hmm. you know, his dad's on a different planet and stuff. So yeah, this season, we
started talking about this whole sex thing because we were talking about Alan the alien in that whole episode.
Yes, they give his backstory, which I thought was amazing.
Yes,
like, they lived on this backstory planet with these one-eyed people, right? And then mm-hmm. the Viltrumites come in, the Fire Nation.
Everything changes when they attack.
Are they not the Fire Nation, bro?
No, they're the Fire Nation, because they think, and they have the same, and, you know, granted, it's not a unique thing, but Fire Nation and Viltrumites, they have the idea of, like, we are better than everybody else, and so we're going to come in, we're going to conquer, and we're going to conquer for your benefit. But anyway, the point I was making is that Viltrum, the Fire Nation, they have a similar thing where their whole idea is, like, we're not only want to conquer you, we're conquering you for your benefit. Like, they have this hubris idea that we're not just conquerors. Like, we're doing it because we're better than you, and we have to conquer you to, like, make your lives, like, we're going to make your life and everybody else's life better by conquering you, by being your master. You want to be controlled by us. We're your betters. We'll make your life better by controlling you.
They start talking about, like, you know, cancer. No one will die of cancer anymore. No one will starve or go hungry. Mm-hmm. So to me, and here's something that I'm waiting for him to really explain, I don't see the issue yet. Because, yes, it sounds wild for some foreign invader to just come to you and be like, we're taking over. You're part of our galactic alliance. You're part of our, you know, whatever. We have dominion over your planet. But, like, just like the president of the United States, if at the end of the day, the everyday human doesn't actually feel any of the Viltrumites' oppression, quote unquote, I don't really...
I don't know, because I don't know if they've said this. I think where the rubber meets the road, or whatever that saying is, that what I'm okay. So, for example, the council, right? Because Earth, whatever, they don't really know anything that's going on at the moment. But let's talk about the council, that essentially is a council to go against Viltrum. It's like a council of people from
every
different
other planet that has been subjugated.
Yeah, and they're like trying to stop Viltrum from conquering the whole thing. I think maybe what their understanding of it is, if you look at Viltrum and what we know about them, they murdered each other for however long it was, hundreds of years, until they felt like they were at, like, the perfect breed of themselves, and then went on to conquer the other planets. I guess what ends up happening is, like, yeah, they might cure cancer and cure all these other things, but the other side of it is they probably start doing the same thing to your planet. Like, they know you'll never be as strong as them, but they start, like, killing off your weakest, like, they start, you know what I mean? Like, you start having to kill each other until you meet the perfect version of your planet, survival of the fittest, and you just fucking kill each other off. That's kind of what I imagine probably happened.
Yeah, I need them to explicitly say something like that.
Yeah, because they haven't said that. That's me just, my assumption is that, like, they force you to also go through a survival of the fittest type thing that they did.
Because
I don't know if that's
here's
true,
the thing.
But
they sent Nolan to conquer Earth, to weaken Earth, right? By getting rid of its defenders, Guardians of the Globe, whatever, which he could have done at any point. You know, he didn't have to wait until he fell in love with Debbie, and I guess that slowed things down, but he could have done that at any point, right? You're also not supposed to really breed with these lesser beings, these lesser species. That's another rule they have. But, like, okay, he comes to Earth, he stays there for 20 years, he has a son, he gets married, he does all this stuff. He ends up killing the Guardians of the Globe at some point, but he doesn't actually, like, violently start murdering humans or anything like that. He doesn't forcibly take over their planet. And I'm just wondering, I just want to see what a planet looks like that is actually under the dominion of Viltrumites.
You know, something else too that I don't really understand, and I hope they explain it. It could just be like a plot hole. It could maybe not be a plot hole, and maybe it's me being too critical. I don't know. At the moment, I don't have too much of an issue with it, but the point I'm getting to is I don't really get why they have to send people to do like this secret, secretive, like,
yeah, I don't get it either. Thing. They're so like, much stronger than everybody
they're
else.
They're so much, because the argument that Nolan says that like maybe they spread themselves too thin and they're too, so instead of like going over and just taking over planets in like these wars, they send in like operatives and they slowly weaken the planet to like prep for like the eventual invasion. But my whole thing is like we saw with Nolan, it took him one day
yes,
to just
one day
get rid of Earth's best defense.
And it wasn't really that good to begin with.
So if they sent three Nolans, like it doesn't take that long. Like
look what they did to the fucking planet, the insect planet. They sent three Viltrumites there.
Yeah.
And they zero diffed the entire planet. Actually, two of them did that because the black one, he was fucking fighting Mark. And
yeah. And so like it doesn't take long for them to conquer planets is my point. Like, obviously, some planets are stronger than others. Like, that right. planet with, like, a wolf, dog, elephant guy, whatever.
I still want to see what's going on with that place. Because that place, whoever that
guy, they might rumble.
I still think that that guy, whatever race he is, I think that they're a genuine mm-hmm. problem, even to the Viltrumites. I think that they are, like, you know, like, you have the Saiyans and you have whatever the fuck Frieza is.
Yeah. They might rumble.
But I think that there's going to be planets, some opposition.
I feel like they can just...
Yeah. Like, I don't think anybody...
When Nolan went through the portal in season one and fought that other planet, the people that invaded us like four times,
yeah, he just wiped
when
them
Nolan
out.
Finally, he just went there and fucking obliterated them by himself. So it's like, I don't see why they need to do this whole, like, I guess where the plot hole comes in.
Something's being missed, like, I think. Not by us, but I think the story hasn't revealed Viltrum's true nature when they take over the planet. There has to be some other thing that we don't know yet.
Yeah, because here's the thing. If I was Viltrum and I was like, okay, we sent Nolan to like this planet 20 years ago. Now, granted, I know they live hundreds of years. 20 years is just a blip of time.
Right.
But still, I'd still be like, hey, like we can do this in about a week. He's been there for 20 years. Like, why haven't we heard from him? Like, it's been 20 years. Like,
Kenny
he hasn't.
So ridiculous. We can do this in about, I thought you were going to say like a year or 2 years. This man said we can do this in about a week. And you're not wrong. That's like, the bad part is that based on what we've seen, based on what the show and the comics and all that shit has shown us so far, you are absolutely correct. It would take nothing for somebody as strong as Nolan to step foot on Earth, kill our president, get on the news and say, you are now subjugated by Viltrum. And we'd be like, what the fuck is that? And sure, people will have their protests. People will go on social media and rant. But at the end of the day,
they'll try.
The second they nuke the fucking White House that he's in or whatever, and he's the only thing still there in DC. Like the only thing in DC that's still left is just like Nolan staring directly into the satellite that's recording him, and DC's off the fucking map.
Or he does the opposite. He nukes somebody, not by nuking them, by just flying into the air and then flying face fucking first into a country and blowing it.
And just like the whole thing. Like, yeah, so I think you're right. It wouldn't take very long for us to be like, yeah, this is what it is. Like, you know, we're just subjugated now, I guess. But we're just missing the part where, and I think that the story hasn't revealed it yet, the part where like, what's the issue? If mm-hmm. you guys are curing cancer, making it where we never go hungry, doing all these fantastical things that you say, right? Because all these things right now, where we live in the real world, are bullshit. Like, we live in a disease-ridden world. We just went through a pandemic. We have crippling levels of poverty and hungry, people going hungry and all types of bullshit. So to me, it's like when people come and start talking about, I can cure all your diseases. People won't die from this, that, and the third. No one will go hungry. You know, there's plenty of water and everything, you know, fresh, clean drinking water for Flint, Michigan. Like all this shit. You're promising all these great things. I'm wondering, okay, what's the catch 22? Does half the population have to die like on some Thanos shit? Because then we have something to fight about, because I don't want half the population to just die. Or
yeah, I guess it's just like at the moment, because like you said, they haven't really revealed, because they haven't said like we're going to kill everybody. They just said like we own the planet, but we're going to do all this stuff. They actually haven't said any of the downsides to it really.
Like they're bringing new technology and shit. Like I don't get it. Like what is the issue? Like somebody needs to explain to me.
I guess for them, it's at the moment the philosophical issue of like tyranny and like being controlled and stuff like
that. But I just think it's funny because, you know, we live in America and you know, our government controls us. Like we get told we get told you have to pay these taxes. You have to follow these laws that we don't really get to choose or do it. Somebody just makes the laws you jaywalking and, you know, against the law, right? Like somebody makes these laws and we get told like, yeah, this is how it is. Like I have to pay for water. I have to pay for these things. It's like, I don't really get, like, if the Viltrumites are doing the exact same thing, like, hey, we're going to implement a tax that you guys have to pay. You no longer pay to the U.S. government. All humans pay a tax to Viltrum. And it's whatever the tax is. I don't know.
Yeah, it's lettuce or whatever.
Yeah, whatever the fuck they want. Like, if they're, you know, they want lettuce because that just, like, empowers them or some shit. Like, maybe there's some kind of supply of energy that the Earth has. But they don't discriminate against planets. They tend to just take over all of them. And I really don't see the issue in terms of, like, your planet is subjugated. Now, if the true nature of them is that they conquer it, they let you guys live there for a little while, and then eventually they say, okay, we need space for more Viltrumites, so we wipe out the planet's population. We just murder everyone eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably happens. Like, they just need more, they just want more planets for Viltrumites, or they just, like, end up making you a slave planet. Like, we want your potatoes and your meat and your lettuce, and so you guys are just all fucking slaves, and you, like,
yeah, I just think it's interesting that the writers, the directors of the show have not shown any of that yet. We have not seen,
yeah,
outside of people who resist or just get caught off guard. Because the other thing that we're being told, I don't know if we've seen it yet, but, like, except with this insect planet, but I get why it happened with the insect planet, because of what Nolan did. We haven't seen them, like, actually just go to a planet and the people resist or whatever, and then them just wipe them the fuck out and be like, all right, you're all fucking dead now. Like, I want to see a planet that peacefully is,
well,
like,
they did it to the one-eyed people, right?
But I don't know if we know that to be true, though, because that story was being told to us by the fucking council people.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. And we know that the council guy is a traitor.
He is.
Thaddeus or whatever. Why Thaddeus?
I knew he wasn't shit.
Yeah. So it was either him or the girl, right? And I knew it wasn't the girl when they had lunch at that cafe. And they did do a red herring with her where they set up this whole thing. There's a mole. Somebody is telling the Viltrumites about what goes on in the council meetings. And so Y Status comes to Alan. He's like, hey, it's your job to figure out who the mole is. And, you know, Alan is so just as a person. Like, he's a perfect white knight. He's like, you mean there's a mole and I have to figure it out? He's like, you always impress me. So then he goes out to dinner with his, you know, love interest girl, whatever. And she starts asking, like, hey, what did Thaddeus ask you? You know, what was he asking you about? What did he want to talk about? Mm-hmm. And immediately, if you watched enough Scooby-Doo, like me and Kenny have watched enough Scooby-Doo, you know that the first person they kind of try to put it on is rarely ever the actual culprit, right?
Yeah.
So her being the immediate first person he talks to, he's like, oh, he said that there's a mole within the council and I have to figure it out. The second he said that, I'm like, interesting. But then at the same time, the Vulture might show up as soon as he whispers that shit.
They are there.
The second he whispers it, like, I don't even know if he finishes his thought before they literally show up outside. So, like, I was like, well, it's not her, because what the fuck? Like, that was entirely too fast, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, the next person is the only other person that they focused on is, you know, wise Thaddeus.
Old man, yeah, Thaddeus.
So this is going way back to the point I was making earlier about how violent Viltrumites are. When they show up to question Alan about, tell us everything you know, is it true that he really fathered offspring? Is it true this, that, and the third? He, like, doesn't give them a response. Like, he gives them a funny response. And immediately gets hit.
They brutalize.
That's the
word
I used
to. Also, by the way, though, Alan is a G, though, because there was three of them there. Not that he would have beaten any of them.
But I think it's corny that they did jump my man, though. They jumped Alan.
They jumped him. Like, I think one-on-one, he could have scrapped.
Yes.
And I guess that's why they sent three, because they knew he was kind of tough.
Because he was apparently designed to be able to fight a Viltrumite, even though they said that, you know, that didn't really happen that way. Like, it, you know. Yeah. It didn't pan out. They wanted somebody to stand up against the Viltrumite. And even when he did fight one-on-one, he still got his ass whipped. And they were like, so they ended up reassigning him. He went from being a fucking a cop out in the field to just like a light stopper guy.
That's still a bad plan, because, like, okay, he's still one guy. Even if he can beat them one-on-one, like, they have a multi-planet army.
Well, I think the goal would have been to produce more Alans, right? Like, if you found out that...
How much time do they have, you know? I don't know.
I mean, however much time they had to fucking develop the one before they came in and destroyed that planet. Don't get me wrong. I think that what we're doing right now is so interesting because we're not doing it on purpose, but there are a lot of plot holes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I want to make something clear. Just in case anybody's listening to this, we're about 37 minutes in, and I guess we have critiqued a lot, but I think we've... I fucking enjoyed everything.
I love the show.
I loved and enjoyed. So I want to make that very clear. Like, I enjoyed it's everything I watched.
As
we're just like talking about the stuff. Like, we're being nerds. We're like nitpicking. Yes. But everything we watched, not that we watched it together, but I heard Fraser already say it. Yeah. We enjoyed all of it. Like I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. So. I literally liked every single thing that I saw. I think that the parts that were ridiculous and bad writing are kind of funny. Like the guy just going 180 on Debbie, like that. You should have known. I was like, I was about to cancel my subscription. That shit still gets me. But I think that the show is still fantastic. But yeah, they pulled up on Alan Alien and they questioned him, and he knows what's up. He knows that this is like, you don't really survive an encounter with a Vulturemite, I'm assuming. That's just kind of the way it goes. So he looks back at his girlfriend, and she's looking out the window all scared and shit. And it's kind of one of those things like, yeah, like I'm going to die anyway, so why would I tell you guys anything? Like, you guys are going to kill me because that's how y'all roll. He even said, aren't you guys normally the, you know, shoot first and then ask questions never type? Like, that's how you guys operate, which also makes them sound kind of dumb, because if you guys want information and you just kill the person that you can get the information from because you're just so violent, then that just makes you guys idiots. Like, you're just barbarians. And that's kind of what this season is so far, these first four episodes anyway, for as intelligent and advanced as the Vulturemites are supposed to be. Because of their violence, though, I feel like they are a bit barbaric. Like,
for sure. Because they, which in a way they're not wrong, but they essentially follow this code. At the end of the day, when everything all breaks down, we still win by just killing you, right? Yep. At the end of the day, like, no matter what the obstacle is, if we can't get the information, blah, blah, blah. Because it is true, they could just send three Vulturemites to Earth whenever they want and wipe it the fuck off the map. Yeah. Like, it could just be gone. So they kind of just operate on this thing where they need information. But if you don't give it to them and they can't get to the bottom what they want to get to the bottom of, they can probably just kill whatever it is that's trying to go up.
Because there's nothing really above them so far in the food chain. They're at a very, very strong advantage against the entire universe, because there's just nothing. So far, we haven't seen anything above them in the food chain, or nothing that the story has told us is above them in the food chain. So it's kind of like, what do we have to be fearful of, right? Like, we can get away with killing.
Which could end up being their downfall.
Yeah, we can get away with killing every single planet we go to. When we don't get the answer we want, we just like, we resort to killing, because who's going to check us? Who the fuck could check us about it? And the fear would be, obviously, and I'm starting to wonder if this is a plot point, like a good one, they don't want them reproducing with other species, because there's potential that you could make someone as strong as a Vulturemite who doesn't agree with the Vulturemite way.
Yeah.
And that is the issue with, like, breeding with other species, because clearly Mark is never going to be with the Vulturem shit. At least the universe, the galaxy, the whatever verse that Mark, the Mark that we get, he's never with the shits, right? He spent 17 years as a normal human being.
Yeah. Well, I think, and I could be wrong, and or maybe misinterpreted, I'm not sure. I think they were saying they're not allowed to breed, and this is on some real racist shit. You're not allowed to breed with lesser races that don't look like us. Like, I think they're okay with Nolan breeding with a human, because, like, Mark looks enough like a human. But I think they're, like, real racist on the insect one. They're like, that baby's purple.
Yeah. They definitely were looking at the insects with disgust, the same way human beings look at most insects with disgust. Like, if a spider, you know, roach or something was in my living space, I would also. But I think that, I guess what I'm saying is, a lot of what you hear in this show seems to not always be the truth. And, like, a major thing about Invincible. Cecil lies a lot. Nolan lies a lot. The Vulturemites lie, like the Draxons, they lie to get Mark there. He's like, meteor shower. Oh yeah, meteor shower. Yeah, yeah. Come this way. they just everybody. What I'm getting is that everybody lies, and it's kind of just the thing about the show. So you have to kind of take, like, that young wise status lies. You kind of have to, like, take what people say as just face value. Like, do not think that it is actually the truth until you get confirmation that what's being said to you is the truth. And I kind of like that about the show, is that even a narrator will say things and it's like, is that true though? Like, is that exactly how it goes?
I mean, because I think one thing that you said, and I think is a good point, like, one of the reasons why, I don't know, on one end, one of the, first I'll make the point, because I do this a lot, where I say, one of the reasons why they could be against them breeding with other races, and like you said, is like, because it can create people that are just as strong as them that'll rise up against them, which could be the case. Like, maybe these insect people, I don't know, we don't know a ton about them, but maybe not even just them, but let's say a Vulturemite bred with, like, a Martian, right? So now you have a Vulturemite that has, like, these shape-shifting powers and shit. And so if you create these, like, mixed breed Vulturemites, they could really cause a problem against Vulturem if they band together, if there's too many of them, if they don't agree with our code and our credo. So that could be a detriment or a threat to Vulturem. On the other hand, who knows if they have so much hubris where they don't even view it that way. They really do view it as like racism. They're like, you guys are lesser. Don't breathe.
I think there's a mix of probably both. Like, I do think there's 100% racism because they, you know, we got to see it. Just the way they talk about the insect people, they're just very, very, very racist about them. But yeah, the idea of them breeding, they don't like. And oh, I wanted to say this. In a lot of mediums, half breeds are stronger than full breeds.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's going to be a plot point at any point, that Mark is probably stronger than his dad and probably stronger than a regular Viltrumite. And that's like an actual, you know, point of contention, period. It never makes sense when you really think about it. But like, for whatever reason, Gohan just has more potential than his father by a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, Gohan's potential is, it makes Goku and Broly and everybody else, like, they just don't really stand the chance. Like, if Gohan actually trained, and you saw from the last movie, if Gohan trains for any amount of time, he will surpass every single Z fighter, every single villain. He will be fucking God of Destruction level. Like, Gohan has the greatest potential in the entire story of Dragon Ball Z, Super, all of that. And that's still consistent, apparently, after the last movie, because he only trained for fucking, what, I don't know, a very short amount of time, and he reached that beast thing, which Akira Toriyama confirmed is stronger than everything else that you've seen prior to that. Like, it's stronger than everything. So it's very interesting, like, half breeds to have this thing in the anime genre and even in just the fantasy genre, where they're just typically stronger than a full breed of something that's really powerful. You know, you breed it with a human and it gets compassion, and somehow that compassion makes it stronger or whatever. Yeah. But that's
pretty wild.
So maybe, you know, maybe Mark, and I think that we got a little snippet when Nolan was fighting against the two actual full breed Viltrumites, and he was saying, they're going to kill us, and they're going to kill all of Draxons. They're going to kill your brother. They're going to kill my new wife. We're all going to die if you don't fight like you need to kill them.
Yeah, you need to get it the fuck together. We're not having a moral discussion here. Right. They're going to kill us. Get it together. Yeah,
you need to get killing get into your done. Mind. Because he's like, I don't kill people. Mark has never really been about that kill life. And his dad's like, you have to. I'm telling you right now, before they wake up from their fucking, you know, slight coma, you have to kill them. They will not stop attacking you. They will not stop coming for us until we literally murder them. And Mark is having a hard time. But then eventually he does snap. He has a Gohan moment. He snaps on the girl and he starts whooping her absolute ass, and she can't even fight back. And when I saw that, I was like, yo, not only is he zero diffing her with his basic ass martial arts that he knows from I don't even know where, like, he just fights, you know, based on, I guess, whatever little training he had with his dad in season one. But like, he doesn't really know how to fight. And it just got me thinking, the way he was dodging everything and then punching her and hitting her, and she was taking all his damage and he just wasn't getting touched at all. I was like, oh God, this is that thing where he probably is way stronger than, like, he could probably fight 10 of them at once when he's at his peak, because he's going to be so much stronger and faster and powerful than they are.
That is interesting, because unless they, at some point, right, and they don't have to do it anytime soon, but at some point, unless they introduce, like, there is, like, a mixed blood buff, it doesn't make sense that in a couple months, like, he can tussle with these fucking war legends.
That girl was clearly, like you said, war legend. That's exact perfect terminology to use for her. She was very clearly a top-ranking general-type person.
Yeah.
Very strong, very well-versed in combat, and she couldn't touch him when he got mad. She was literally fighting back, and he was just dipping everything, and then punch, punch, throat chop. I'm like, yo. It reminded me of when Naruto, like, when his frog Kumite shit just started, you know, going crazy. It was giving me that vibe. I was like, okay, so no more getting touched, I guess. But yeah, half-breeds in fantasy genre just happen to be stronger typically than full-breed thing. So that was cool to see him unleash. It also reminded me of Superman, because they're already based on, you know, Kryptonians anyway. Like, they're very Kryptonian coded. The whole idea that, like, you know, Earthling mixed is strong. Like, the same thing with Superman's son is apparently outrageous. Like, you know, he's half breed and just absolutely fucking ridiculous. There's just so much shit like that. I'm very used to it. But yeah, back to, so we didn't really get to talk about this because we got onto the multiverse thing. But like, the episode starts off with this fight between the Immortal and Invincible.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, the Immortal's whipping Mark's ass. You know, he's just, at some point he starts to get the best of him. And then Nolan comes in, Omni-Man comes in, cuts off his arm, and then fucking, like, cuts his head off, and then he throws the head back, and then, like, his son squeezes it to death or some shit, and he's like, how's that for Immortal? They, when they killed the Immortal, I was like, okay, this, again, back to my thought that this was a dream sequence, like, this has to be a dream sequence, because what the fuck is this about? And then they find, like, these refugees, this resistance, they find them, and it's the Guardians of the Globe, and they start murdering them. Like, Omni-Man starts brutalizing them, and he gets to the one dude who's in the suit, right? The one robot android dude. And he says, hold on, I got the quote here somewhere. Let me see if I can find this.
I remember what Omni-Man said.
He says, so the android thing says, you'll die one day. And Omni-Man says, yeah, but you should have died at birth.
Yep.
I was like, bro, what the actual fuck is going on here? That line that was so vicious. I love the writing of this
brutal.
Show.
Brutal.
Very brutal.
And then you see Adam Eve, and she's got like a shaved head and scars all over her face. And then her and Mark still obviously have some sort of relationship there. And she's like, you know, betrayed by him.
Oh, God, that part, too. So they get into a little fight, and Mark hits her in some kind of way in her neck, which paralyzes her, because he's like, oh, you killed her. He's like, no, I just paralyzed her. And he's like, I got some people who can look after her, and I can come visit whenever I want.
Mm-hmm.
And when he said that, I was like, oh, no. Oh, fucking no. That's too sinister. You literally paralyzed this girl from the waist down, or probably paraplegic level, actually.
Yeah.
He's like, I've been working on, he's like, that's what you've been working on. Because he apparently has been practicing on, like, people.
Mm-hmm. How just to fucking paralyzing them without killing them.
Yeah, how to paralyze people. And he did it to Eve. And he's like, I got some people who will look after her so I can come visit. And when he said that, the way he said it was so calm and collected. I was like,
he was chill.
Sociopath, like straight up sociopath level. So yeah, the story has clearly taken a dark turn when it got to this point.
I wonder if in these other universes, Mark got his power sooner, because then he would have more time with his dad.
Right.
To get indoctrinated into his dad's way of thinking. Because what eventually gets revealed from Angstrom is that in almost every other universe, Mark sides with his dad.
Yep.
And this is one of the few universes where he does not, and he goes against his dad. So, you know, I just wonder, you know, what, you know, why? You know, it'd be interesting to see, like, why.
That's a plot point that we're talking about now, and we probably will get an actual answer to at some point. Because Invincible is really good at that. They're really good at developing plot points that they developed in earlier episodes. I love that. Mentioned it already. But yeah, I think that we probably will get some kind of answer about the other verses and why they do team up in the other verses so much. And this is like an anomaly almost. Like, the verse that we're watching is kind of the exception, not the rule. But yeah, Mark. So after this whole like other verse bullshit happens, they switch to Mark in his life now. He's recalling what happened with his dad. And apparently he's not really allowed to be a hero anymore because of everything that happened. You know, Cecil doesn't trust him. One, him being a Viltrumite and what happened with the last one. And two, just like mental state, right? That's always a fear. It's like, what happens if Superman snaps? Who the fuck is Superman's therapist going to be? So in order to prevent a disaster, he's like, you can't actually work on a Guardians of the Globe. You can't actually be an Earth protector. We're just going to deal with the ones that we already have that we can control. You know, Cecil's a control freak. And they show the Guardians of the Globe trying to do their missions, and they're fighting against very like bullshit enemies. And they suck at it.
And they are terrible. The Guardians of the Globe, the new Guardians of the Globe,
new ones,
so trash. And at the end, maybe there's just no good options available. But at some point, you got to blame Cecil for thinking that these fucking guys can get anything done. Like, I get it. You know, they do this, and then he brings Immortal back. He brings in this new guy, Bulletproof, who's wearing the prototype Invincible outfit.
Yeah.
But like, first of all, I don't know if for all the Rexplode fans out there, I'm sorry, but like, he's trash. I don't know why he's on the premier number one hero team.
Yeah.
Like, Rex has never done anything to prove that he should be there. He's fucking trash.
Yeah, it's actually kind of
Robot,
weird.
I think, makes sense.
Yeah. Everybody else, I think, is, I mean, first of all, Adam Eve is broken. This season,
Adam Eve is broken.
She's fucking transmuting things, Kenny. She's doing alchemy. Like,
yeah, she
turned an apple into a 24 karat gold solid apple. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
That's just straight up transmutation. She turned fucking whatever was on the table into a bowl of fruit. She put food in the fridge. She's creating things from nothing. It's giving very Dr. Manhattan. I was like, how is she not a threat? Like,
she is one of the most broken.
Yes. Like, I think that if they develop her powers more and more, if she keeps getting stronger, she will be a problem for Viltrumites, I imagine.
Yeah. Like her, yeah, I mean, I don't, yeah, I mean,
her abilities are ridiculous.
The problem with her her power, and until we get an explanation of what her power actually does and its limitations, it seems like her only limitation is creativity.
Yep.
Because when we saw her in season one fighting, and she creates like these little like purple force fields, like fuck all that. Like yeah. You can build houses on people. Like
she can make
you
anything.
You can just do whatever you want. Like yeah. At any time, it seems like
transmutation is very, very broken. Like to just turn matter into something else that it's not. You fucking took an apple, okay? You took an apple and turned it to 20. She said this is 24 karat gold solid. So you could sell this. And her dad was like, I don't fucking want that. I was expecting that when she left, it would turn back or something like that. But
if I'm her, and let's say I'm fighting somebody, right? I feel like I'm almost like Mahito from JJK.
Right.
Like if I touch you one time, I can win.
Get transmuted to anything.
Yeah, like, and let's say maybe she doesn't want to do it to the actual person she doesn't want to kill. Okay, whatever. If I touch your suit, I can now make your suit weigh 400 more pounds. You know what I mean? Like, I can make you just hit the ground and you can't move in it.
Like, yeah, she strapped the one guy. She ends up getting to a fight on a bridge later on, and she gets like a little cocky because she knows that she could zero diff this guy and she's having a bad day. So because she had a bad day with her parents, she decides to like take it out on this guy. She's like, you picked the wrong day to fuck with me right now. She says more so like, you picked the right day. That's exactly what I wanted to hear. Like, because he was with the shits and she was like, perfect. Like, I wanted to take my anger out on somebody. But they get to this fight and you could tell from the very beginning, she could end the fight whenever she wants. But she's having fun with it. And because she's having fun with it, she ends up essentially getting some old people endangered because they fall off the bridge in their car and they end up almost drowning. And we don't know if they're dead or alive yet. But she could have zero diffed him is my point. There's a part where when she does like actually take it seriously, she kind of just like forces him to be stuck to the bridge. She puts a little purple thing around his arm and then he's stuck. He like blows himself up. He hits up against the top of the bridge. He slides down. From what I understand, this guy's human too. So like, you know. That fall that he took had to be like, all right, you're not getting back up from that. Like, you should be done for the rest of this fight. And, you know, but yeah, Adam Eve seems a little too broken to me in this season. Not in a bad way, but just like, I think you should look out for it. I think the Voltramite should be like on high alert that we need to probably just kill her just to get it over with.
Yeah. Just to be clear. So in season one, when like they were picking the members of the team of the new Guardians of the Globe, and Adam Eve was just like, I'm not going to be part of this team, especially not if Rex is here. Like, he's a piece of shit. They chose wrong, okay? Like, I would have been like, all right, Rex, you're out.
Yeah.
Like, peace, bro. Like, we got to take
Adam. I don't get his power either. It's like explosions or some type of thing.
Yeah, but I think there's a limited number of times he can do it. Because I know at one point he said, like, I'm out or I'm almost out.
Yeah.
And then also just, like, these little explosions.
They don't do anything.
He's so trash. And he's just also a trash person. Like, yeah. He's just not like
duplicating hands in reaction. He wants so funny.
Drink. I love duplicating all her hoetry.
Yeah.
Right. Like he cheated on Eve with duplicate.
Yep.
And then he walks in to duplicate fucking, by the way, how old duplicate? Fucking 18.
Yep. Probably.
She's fucking the immortal.
Who's thousands of years old.
That shit was
she
wild.
She tries to justify by saying, you know, if you add up the age of all of my other duplicates.
Stop.
She said we're probably closer to the same age if you add up all the lives that
I'm... is not how it works.
No, it's not. Not even a little bit. Like, that was some girl math shit. That was the definition of girl math.
That's crazy.
She said, yeah, well, if you carry the 2 and drop the 3 and divide by 6, we're pretty much the same age. Like, bitch, this is pedophilia. He came out with his towel open. And he's like, this doesn't concern you. Like, yes, the fuck it does. You're new on the team and you're already fucking people on the team. This is Cecil. This is unprofessional. What the fuck is happening here? Conflict of interest. Like, what's going on?
But yeah, Rex is trash. The new Guardians of the Globe are just awful. Trash. Obviously, Immortal is really good. He's no match for fucking the Viltrumites, but he's the shit outside of
that. Fly, he's super strong and all that. He has like a lot of the same abilities, but they're just so much worse than Viltrum people. So so Immortal and Bulletproof get added. You know, Immortal's made the leader. I don't know if you want to say anything else, but I was going to move on to like, you know, Angstrom.
Well, I was going to move on to Angstrom as well, because I have a couple things I wanted to say about that.
All right, I'll let you kick off the Angstrom stuff, because he is voiced by one of my favorite actors, actually, from that really sad show. I forget what it's called. This Is Us or something like that. But Sterling K. Brown, he is an Oscar winner, I'm pretty sure, by now. I think he might even have more than one. But I know he
recognize his face.
Yeah, he's really, really good. Sterling K. Brown, I think is his name. Let me see. Sterling K. Brown.
That is his name. Yeah.
You know him.
Yeah, this guy's the man.
He is the man. He's amazing. He's actually amazing. Yeah. So he's the voice of Engstrom. So as soon as I heard Engstrom talking, I was like, oh shit, they actually have my guy in here. I really like this guy. If you don't know,
I like that guy a lot too.
Yeah, he's awesome. So go ahead, kick off the Engstrom segment, because we have a lot to talk about. We haven't talked about the Mahler twins at all or Engstrom yet.
Yeah. So I like his voice actor a lot now that I know who it is. I don't like Engstrom. I'm sorry. let me get the Engstrom quick. So first, I think a lot of it is cool. The multiverse thing, you just accept it. You're like, okay, this is part of the story.
Yep, hopefully this is what it is.
And then you just move on and you enjoy everything you can enjoy. So I'm watching it and he's doing all this stuff. He's setting up. He's doing this thing with the Mahler twins. And the Mahler twins start. And here's unfortunately the thing. When somebody describes something and they're like, do not do this.
Yes.
Because if you do this, everything will go wrong.
Yep.
And then you know, well, at some point that's going to happen.
Yep.
So the Mahler twins. So Engstrom, to go over who he is. He, for whatever reason, his power is that he can create portals and he can go through dimensions and universe. And so he wants to essentially create ultimate peace throughout the multiverse. And he believes in order to do this, he can connect with the other versions of himself across all of the different universes, gain the knowledge of all these universes, and create like this utopia of universes where he takes all the best technology from the different ones and the best practices from ones and tries to share it with all of the other ones. You know what? Not a bad plan.
Actually brilliant.
Yeah, I really appreciate what he's trying to do there, right? But then, and he seems like a very intelligent person. And this is where sometimes I get annoyed at like people being intelligent doing really dumb things. So we get to he gets the Mahler twins. And the Mahler twins, they're super intelligent as well as being super strong. And they are able to do this thing that he hasn't been able to figure out. And that's essentially transmit perfect memories and mind across like multiple bodies, right? So Mahler twins essentially design a super version of their thing that transmits their memories so that Engstrom can get all of the memories and all everything from all of the versions of him and put it inside himself or like share it, whatever.
Yeah.
They say, do not take the helmet off under any circumstances or like catastrophic things will happen, right? So blah, blah, blah. Unbeknownst to them, Cecil, even though these guys are trying to do a good thing, Cecil's like, hey, there's these crazy energy readings happening over here.
Yep.
And he gets Invincible to go check out what's going on. Invincible shows up. The Mahler twins are there, which already not a good sign from Invincible's perspective. And then there's this guy, Cecil. And then, so they start fighting and he's just like, stop, guys, stop. Hey, guys, stop, stop. And he's like, you don't get it. And it's one of those things where I feel like if he just said like, Invincible, I'm trying to stop your dad from killing everyone.
Right.
If he like said that, he would have been like, oh shit. You know what I mean? Like, I would have stopped him. Or, like,
something that would actually give him pause.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything to give him pause. And then, after he's told, under no circumstances, take the helmet off, he takes the helmet off and, like, kills... Because he's like, oh, well, you guys are fighting. And for whatever reason, I guess he thinks if he takes the helmet off, he's going to stop these two from fighting. And
yeah, I don't really get that part.
He tries to take the helmet off because he's like, he doesn't like violence. But then in taking the helmet off, he murders all of the versions of himself and all of these different Mahler twins. And the only people that survive is like a Mahler twin and Invincible himself. And then one of the Engstrom survive. And then all this culminates in the fact that now Engstrom becomes a villain and like he wants revenge on Invincible for ruining his master plan. And I think that's kind of cheesy because it's like you're the fucking idiot that did everything wrong. And now you're mad at Invincible. Like, he didn't fucking know what was going on. Why are you mad at him? And now he's like a big brain villain. And then I guess the final cherry on that is like he's going to different universes and like capturing other versions of Mark in order to figure out his weaknesses to defeat the original Mark. And my thing is like, if you already captured this one, you already know how to do it then, right? Like, what do you need to know? Like, you already captured him. Like, what else do you need to know?
It's
like you already know how to do it.
It's so silly. I love the Mahler twins, though. They are amazing.
I love the Mahler twins.
They are so good for this show. So one of the big plot points with them that has been a consistent theme throughout the season one was who's the original? Because they look exactly the same. And because they are, whatever one is the clone is a perfect replica, meaning it has the same memories, thoughts, everything. So it's actually really hard for the clone to say, I'm not the original. And this is an argument they've been having forever. And this season, after episode one, I thought this was brilliant too. I was like, damn, why didn't I think about this? Why didn't the Mahler twins think about this too? As smart as they are, but they probably just think about so many other more intricate things. That's going to be my excuse for them.
No, I think it gets kind of answered.
Okay, but so let's start. Let me finish the point. So after Dr. Idiot takes off his helmet and kills literally everybody there, okay, except Invincible, after he does that, the one Mauler twin left is just completely disfigured. He is like, he's Two-Face. Half his body is burned and disfigured really badly. He looks awful. And he creates another clone because that's just what he has to do. Like, God forbid there is at least two of them. So he creates a clone. And throughout these four episodes of the season two, he constantly berates the clone because he's like, well, look at me. I'm very clearly the original because I look at the way I look. I look fucking ridiculous right now. Like, and he's like, why didn't I think of this sooner? He's like, why didn't I think of this sooner? This is amazing. I'm clearly, you know, the original, and you're clearly the clone, which means go fetch me water, go fetch me this drink that I like, go do these things. Whatever I say do, you have to do because you're the inferior one. I guess that being a clone is considered inferior for some reason to them. So like, that's just how they see it.
Yeah, that's like their whole joke. Yeah.
Even though clearly the original looks terrible and like you can't even see out of one side of your face. Like, bro, I'm like the clone should be like, bro, I am the fucking superior one. Look at you. Like, actually look at you. Well, I don't care who was first.
Eventually he does do that.
Well, so the wrap up of that whole Mauler twin storyline is that, yes, you can tell which one is the original now based on just how bad the original looks. But the clone decides, fuck it, I'm going to poison you. And once you're dead, I'll create another clone. And then it'll just be back to the original point of like, now you can't tell us apart. And he says that some things are better left the way they are. And that's kind of the end of the season. It's like some things are better left the way they, you know, the way they are. Let me see. It says things are the way they are for a good fucking reason is the line that the twin says at the very end before he creates another version of himself.
That was interesting. I didn't think of this until right now. Maybe that's like a keynote, like a lesson of the season. Like maybe this whole bringing in other universes is a bad thing. And maybe I could be super looking into this. Oh,
that's, yeah, but wrong, no, that's, but that line is,
I feel
good.
Like, yeah, I feel like it's like trying to bring in all this technology from the other universes is going to end up being a really bad thing because it's like, it could end up bringing more Viltrumites together somehow. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. You saying it right there made me think of it. I didn't think of that beforehand. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe that could be a point.
Yeah, I think that is a good idea, actually, that's kind of the lesson. I mean, that is always the lesson, though, I think. Now that we are talking about it, I think in everything with multiversal travel and stuff like that, it's always this thing of do not tamper with the time-space continuum. Do not tamper with other verses. Even in Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, right? Wanda wanted to go to another verse and steal their children. Like, steal her other selves. It was such a bad plot. But, like, she wanted to go somewhere else and steal her imaginary created children that, by the way, she could just create again. But she wanted to steal someone else's. And it's just like, that's just one, slow, but also two, just a bad idea for all these reasons. And then it'll cause this, I forget what they called it in Marvel, but like this thing that will collapse the entire verse. Like it'll destroy a canon event that didn't happen. And like, it'll cause this rift and the whole verse will just collapse on itself. And they showed you the Doctor Strange where he did it, trying to save the girl that he loved over and over again until eventually it caused that to happen. So his verse is like completely destroyed. But I think that you're right. Things are the way they are for a good fucking reason as the end of the first half of the season. That's probably just like a foreshadowing of, you know, what's to come, because the utopia idea from Engstrom sounded amazing. Like when he said what he was doing, I was like, oh wow, that's actually a really benevolent and good idea. Like you're going to take,
yeah, I agree.
This world has no one hungry. This world has no disease. This world has no bad issue with distribution of wealth, like, you know, how our country does. Stuff like that. You're going to figure out how to solve all these problems from listening to all the problems and ways that these worlds have solved it, and then give them what they're missing. And I thought that was fantastic. But then, like, it all gets thrown out the window when he removes his helmet and incinerates everybody there, and then he gets a big brain, and now he starts talking about, I hate Invincible, I have to get revenge.
Yeah, I think it's weird, because I think for such a interesting character, I guess I'm just a little disappointed in how he just ends up becoming kind of a generic big brain like villain in such a silly way. Cause like
same.
I really like what he was building up. And I think it would have been really cool because he takes it off. Basically the point I'm getting to is like, it's for the greater good. Like he's watching these people fight and shed blood. And like in his mind, for the greater good, he was going to take this helmet off and stop them, I guess. But it'd have been cool to have been like, you know what? I'm going to let this sacrifice happen and let them rumble for the greater good, because what I'm doing right now is going to solve all of this shit. Like, this is like, these two were fighting here, but like in the next hour, I'm going to have the knowledge to be able to like,
yeah,
make this not a problem ever again. And so I don't know, just, but
also that's, you know, real quick, the voice of Thaddeus the Wise sounded like Optimus Prime to me. While I was listening to him speak, I kept on like honing into his voice because he just sounded so familiar. And then I thought about the Transformers movies, and I'm pretty sure the guy who voices the traitor mole dude, Thaddeus the Wise, I feel like that's just Optimus Prime's voice actor. I don't think anyone else sounds like that. He just sounded so much like him. I don't know if you remember what he sounds like, but yeah.
Not off the top of my head. You know, it's so funny because after we did the podcast on season one, we rewatched season one with Connie's sibling. We watched the whole season without them realizing that Steven Yeun, the Asian guy from
Walking Dead,
Glenn from Walking Dead, is the main character. He's Mark. Yeah. But it's so funny because like at some point toward the end of the season, eventually they paid attention to the credits. They were like, Steven Yeun. And I was like, yeah. I was like, it's Mark. Look, what are you? Yeah. Yes.
Although I will say.
But just funny.
I kind of forgot that it's him as well. And when I looked up, what did I look up? I was like, oh, Sterling K. Brown. I was confirming that Sterling K. Brown was the voice actor of Angstrom. And I saw all the actors basically for season two. And it, you know, it had J.K. Simmons, which is Omni-Man, amazing voice actor, amazing actor on top of that. But it showed him. And then it had the Steven Yeun guy. Is that his name? Steven Yeun? It showed his name.
Yeun.
It showed him as well. And I was like, oh shit, that is him. And then once I saw his picture and saw his name, I couldn't like unhear that it was Glenn. Like I can hear. He's really good at voice acting now because he does a good job of just sounding like a typical white guy. Like, I will say.
I mean, I like Steven Yeun. I think he's a good actor. Everything I've seen him in, I mean, not that I've seen him in a lot, but we talked about, although I don't think you've seen it yet, but that show Beef on Netflix.
Oh yeah,
I didn't watch he's the main character in that. And I think he does a fucking, like, I think that show is really fucking good. I enjoy it a lot. He does a great job in it. So, I mean, I like Steven. It's cool.
So, episode three, we're talking about how it's such a good episode all around. And one of the big points of it that made it so good to me.
That cliffhanger.
Oh, man. The cliffhanger was so good. So, of course, this.
That's what you're about to talk about, right? I don't want to throw you off.
No, literally that.
Okay.
You know, he's in college and he's doing all these college things. His roommate puts a sock on the door and talks about, like, if it's a sock on the door, you got to get the fuck out of here. Go beat your feet. Because I'm probably getting some cheeks or getting my cheeks smashed or whatever, his homosexual roommate. And this fucking dog that looks like Doctor Strange, but as a dog, comes flying in and, like, Invincible is not with it at all. He immediately goes on the offensive. He, like, drags the dog out by the collar, throws him into a fucking playground, then, like, throws him into a forest, starts whooping his ass and shit. He's like, who the fuck are you for real? Because this character is not real. Like, this is not a real... He's like, I'm whatever dog. And he's like, that's not a real thing.
Yeah, from, like, a comic book. He's like, fucking stop.
Yeah, you need to stop. This is terrible. And then eventually the thing reveals itself. It's like, okay, don't hurt me. I'm actually just this insect from this planet, Thraxa.
I thought he was real, by the way. I was just like, maybe the comic book is... Like, superheroes are real, and they're still, and there's comic books. Maybe the dog is based on... Like, maybe somebody made that comic book based on... You know, the dog that they knew from some other planet.
I was very confused.
I thought he was real. I was on it. I was like, oh shit, that dog.
While you were
real?
Thinking that maybe it's real, I was staring at the screen like, what is going on here? Like, I was skeptical.
I was in.
I was not a believer. I was very skeptical the whole time. I was staring at the screen thinking there has to be some kind of like thing with this. I don't know what it is. Like, my brain wasn't working fast enough to try to decipher exactly what I was seeing. But I was like, I'm with Mark though. Just use violence. Be a Viltrumite. And also, I thought that whole section was interesting because in that moment he did seem very much like his dad. He was threatening and saying, tell me what I know, tell me what you know, tell me who you are or else. And the way he was kind of standing over the guy while he was pleading his case, it just reminded me so much of Omni-Man and like just the Viltrumites with Alan and stuff like that and how they brutalized him. And I started to see signs of Mark being like a typical Viltrumite, and I was like, damn, I wonder if there's, you know, there's going to be a point where he really has to fight against his nature, because at the end of the day, you know, you are what you are, right? You're a Saiyan, Saiyans do certain things. You're a Viltrumite, you're going to do certain things as well. So that little scene just kind of showed me that. But then eventually he calmed down and he has a heart because he was like, this doesn't concern me. Look, I just started college. I didn't even take my first class yet, bro. I know that, like, you're saying that a meteor shower is going to wipe out your planet. That's super far away. But unfortunately, I'm just a teenager trying to get my college experience on. My girlfriend's back in my dorm. I'm trying to, you know. So, yeah. And then he's like, but wait. Like, we really, 44 billion people are going to die or something like that. And then Mark, being the human side of him, he turns around and he eventually decides, like, you know what? I am going to go. And when he gets there, he asks him, like, all right, so this planet is beautiful. Where's the threat? Like, where's the meteor showers that I heard about? Like, what's the issue here? I don't really see this planet in need of saving.
Real quick, something that threw me off is when they were, he was like, how long is it going to take to get there? And I think it's he like said 6 days. Like 2 weeks or something. Or six days.
Six days. That. Yeah.
And then he says, that's like a quarter of my life. Like, he says something crazy that caught me off guard. The insect guy is like, you know, that's like a quarter of my life. And I was like, what the fuck?
I'm going
to
find out later on. Yeah.
And then, yeah, you find out that like they only live for 9 months or whatever it may be.
Yeah, a year. A year max. And as his stepmom was telling him, like, yeah, time is very different on our planet. I never really considered it until Nolan started telling me about how short our lifespan was. Like, mm-hmm. to them, of course, and this makes sense, that's just normal. The same way to Nolan, living for thousands of years is normal. And so his mom is a pet and all that stuff. And like how we think about dogs and cats, and how I've said I've had many cats throughout my life. And I don't really think about like every individual cat I've had throughout my life now, because I'm so much older. The cat I had when I was 5 and the cat I had when I was 10. Now that I'm like in my big age, I kind of don't really think or care too much about those cats, you know, as blunt as that may be, but like they were such a small part of my life, right?
He
gets the Thraxa, and the bug is clearly on some bullshit, because it's just like, oh, meteor shower, like, what are you talking about? Oh yeah, the meteor shower, yeah, come this way.
Yeah, this way.
And so he gets to their leader, and it's his fucking dad, and this caught me all the way off guard, because he's like, hey son, mm-hmm. it's been a while. And that's the name of the next episode, like, it's been a while. But that cliffhanger was amazing. It was so good. And you could have even said that, like, you could kind of see it coming, because
see it coming.
As soon as Nolan stepped out, I was like, oh, of course it's his dad. Like, it just made sense to me. And I was, if the scene would have went on for, like, I swear to God, 5 seconds longer, I'd have been like, he's going to see his dad. Like, I was right there.
Yeah, maybe.
I was right there.
Maybe at the time, when I saw Nolan, I was like,
they do it fast enough that they don't give you too much time to dwell on who the person is that's going to come out. But they don't let you think about it long enough. Yeah. When his dad comes out, though, I love it.
It's really good. And then, so I said at episode 3, which is the episode with that cliffhanger, is my favorite. But then sometimes when I think about it, it might be episode 4. Just off of the start of episode 4, that song, usually I'm not a big fan of like insert songs and shows. And like, I'm just not a big fan of them.
They're done really well in Invincible. There's a couple of them in this season.
Bro, in this episode, that song, whatever it's called.
When Omni-Man's drifting?
When he's drifting through the fucking space. That song was hitting me. And then when he was like just giving up and he's like drifting and he's going to go into a black hole and he's like thinking about his life and he's going to just like let himself go into a black hole. And then what stops him is he sees the spaceship crashing of the insect people and he saves them from going into the black hole instead of just like going into it himself. But like that song that's playing, that whole sequence of seeing him drift and think about his life and everything had me really invested. And then I think in that same episode is when you have Debbie. There's like a song that plays for her. Yep. She's walking around and like one of her fucking heels falls off and she's like super stressed out. And like, she's just walking through the city and the whole world just going on with what the world is. And she's just dealing with all of this guilt and sadness.
She's been having a bad go at it with Nolan. The entire season she's been, the cabinets have been fucking opening and she's trying to close them. The mailbox, it keeps on opening when she's trying to close it. She's trying to sell a house. And then this was the other part that had me dying. The unreal ass husband that came in to buy a house with his wife.
Oh my God.
That shit was so unreal. I burst out laughing. This shit was written. So, okay. I have to say, for as good as this show is, some of the scenes are so comically funny that they just can't be realistic. And I think the writers know that because, okay, so this couple comes in to buy a house off of Debbie and her other realtor guy. And the wife is like, oh, it's perfect. It's in a great area with great schools and it's safe and there's public transit really close by. And the husband's like, nah, they didn't really do a good job on this one. And she's like, no, but it's perfect, honey. This is everything that we said we wanted. He's like, listen, whore, until you start earning the money around here, you don't get to say anything. All right. And I was just like, I was like, what is this, the fucking 20s? Like, what is happening? What is going on? Why is this the 20s all of a sudden? Why is this the 1920s, to be clear, because we're in the fucking 20s right now. Why is this the 1920s just out of nowhere? It became the fucking 1920s. Like, this man came home and was like, where's my dinner and my beer? And just started whipping on his wife for no fucking good reason. It was so unhinged.
It is weird because that doesn't... Okay, I'm not going to say that doesn't happen anymore, but... In general, I feel like in developed areas, that's not really a thing. Like, if you go to, like, some shitty backwater town, there's probably some guy with a beer belly beating his wife. There's obviously domestic violence. The point I'm getting to is, like, publicly being, like, you ain't shit because you're a woman to your wife isn't really a thing anymore.
Yes. Right? Like that's
just not done publicly
in front of people like that. Like two people, including a woman.
It still happens in private.
Yeah. I mean, Donald Trump just said overtly in the last, like, what, couple years, some wild shit, right? Some wild misogynistic shit. So, like, we know it happens. It's just kind of ridiculous for it to happen like that in that setting in front of an actual woman who's not under your control at all. He's like, shut up, whore. Until you earn the money in this relationship, you don't get a say in anything. I was like, what am I watching? Why is this happening? Why is this the 1920s again? Like, I just don't get it. So that was really funny. But yeah, Debbie, just back to the point, because she whispers under her breath, she's not your pet, which also was just like so comically bad. But like, she's been having a bad go at it, to the point. She's been having a very, very bad go at it. And the insert song for her scene and the insert song for Nolan is very well done. And it does depict how when you're going through stuff, and I've been through this, I'm sure you've been through it. Sometimes when you're like going through shit in life and you kind of look at the world around you and how it's just going on without you.
Yes.
That feeling is kind of fucked. It reminds me of
everything just goes on. You know what I mean? Like everywhere else in the world, you're just such a small part. Everything else is just still doing what everything else always does.
Kids are playing in the playground, screaming and yelling, playing tag. Cops are like, you know, turning on their sirens to get donuts faster. Ambulances are coming by. Like people are just doing people are getting off of work. And you're literally feeling like your life is about to end. You're feeling at your worst. You're feeling really down about things. And the world is just going on without you.
To compare it to a lighthearted thing and a not lighthearted thing. One, it's like if somebody close to you, if a family member like dies, right? And you live with that, like when that just happens, the day that happens and the days after that happen, and you know, like, oh my God, my uncle, my cousin, my aunt just died. And you like, and you have to walk to the store to like get something, and everybody else's life is just happening as normal as it would every other day. And you're sitting there dealing with the fact that, like, you know, Uncle Don just died or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, and you're dealing, and your whole world feels different because, like, you have this perspective shift in those days where, like, your world feels different. Everybody else's world is just kind of going on as it is. Another example, and I feel like we've all felt this, where maybe you watch a really good movie or anime or show or play a really good game that really makes you think about life at the end of it and, like, really hits you.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I've experienced some stuff like that, you have, like, this empty feeling at the end of it, like, because it was so good and you just have this empty feeling. And then it's weird to just talk to other people because you're like, you guys don't feel this emptiness I feel. You didn't experience this.
Finishing a book in public or around people, finishing anything, a manga chapter. I've read manga at a party before on my phone. And like, you finish an amazing chapter that has your heart pumping. And then you look around after you close your phone and everybody's just doing their thing. They're just living life. They have no idea the emotional turmoil that you're in because you just watch somebody die in this anime that you've been, you know, watching for a while or reading for a while. So. Yeah. Yeah, that I like that they capture that about how, and this is the part that saddens me a little bit thinking about it, just because I do think about my own mortality a lot. How when a person dies, eventually people just kind of like stop talking about it. Like they stop talking about you. You kind of just like disappear. You know, some people are more immortal than others because they leave a mark on the world. But a lot of people just live, they die, and then that's it. Like you don't really hear about them anymore. Their memory is just that's what they are. They're just a memory in a few people's minds, and that is literally all. But you know, life just goes on. Like people have died.
And I was gonna say, and on that, and the saddest part, and I think maybe this is part of what you're saying, one of the saddest things about that is not only are you just a memory, but like you said, people stop talking about you because a lot of people say, like, I just want to be remembered. Like I've come to terms with death. I just want people to remember me. And one of the saddest things is like after you die, at some point, people have to stop remembering you in order to just go on with their life. Yep. They can't dwell on you and your memory because it's going to be hard for them to continue their life if they keep doing that. Yep. So like they kind of have to force themselves to forget you for most days. There'll be some days where they remember you, but for most days, they have to not think about you because they have to live their life.
And whenever I go to a funeral, after the funeral and you go to the gravesite and you look around, and you just realize, so your family member means everything to you, right? You lose somebody in your family and you're at the funeral and it's like the worst thing in the world. You get to the gravesite and you see the ground dug up and the casket ready to go in. And you realize that like your family member going in here in this fucking plot of dirt is literally just one of thousands of people who are in the same exact cemetery who are just the exact same. Like they're just almost in a sad way insignificant. When you look around and you see how many other little tombstones that are lined up, you're like, wow. You know, like this person that's going underground right now means everything to me. But when you look around, you're like, holy shit, there's so many of them. This is just like one more person, just one more number ticked off.
Yep.
So interestingly enough, and I thought about this while we've been podcasting for over 2 years and just all the other shit that we're doing in terms of content creation, in a very weird way, no matter what happens to me and you, our voices, like who we are, is immortalized through this podcast. Mm-hmm. Because even once I'm dead and gone, once you're dead and gone, like somebody could play this episode of the podcast, they could play any of the over, you know, 200 episodes now, including Patreon exclusives and stuff. They can play any of these episodes and hear us and almost be connected to us, because in this moment that we're recording this, in this moment, like this is what our life was at the time, right? Like this is who we were in these moments, our laughter, our sadness, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like I almost cried on the last episode thinking about Akira Toriyama, right? Like literally choked up on that one. But then this one, I'm dying laughing at how bad some of the bullshit is with like the misogyny and stuff. So it's like you get all these different facets of who we are, me and you. And again, no matter what happens to us, like that will always be a thing that exists in the world until, of course, like, you know, Spotify and all that shit goes down too. Then it's like, all right, well, we're gone. We're officially gone. But
that's all gone.
As long as those platforms continue, as long as these platforms like Apple and Spotify and stuff like that continue, we'll always be a part of, you know, a part of the world, which is super interesting to think about. It's just an interesting thing I thought about. But
it is, kind of cool. Yeah, we're off topic and on topic, because all of that stemmed from the fact that episode 4 has two amazing moments with Nolan and Debbie.
Yeah.
And these two people that were married and the circumstances that they are in, because Nolan is just living in all this mental turmoil with everything he's done and said, and this life perspective change that was caused by his son. And he's just kind of drifting through the universe and feels lost. And then you have Debbie, who's the victim of this, who's also kind of drifting through her life, lost, and dealing with all of this just stuff that is inside of her. And all that. And then with the insert songs, what I said I usually don't like, I enjoyed both of those songs. I thought they fit the mood and the tone really, really well.
Yeah,
I thought it was cool that Nolan found a reason to live, even to some small degree. Like in that moment, he was going to go into the black hole and nothing was going to matter. He wasn't going to exist anymore. But then he saw a ship and he, for one reason or another, decided to save that ship and the life forms on it, where normally he's a killer. He saves these lives. And then from there, who knows what he would have done, but then he gets made the leader of these people and he kind of really starts to gain a new perspective on life as a whole.
Yeah, and realizes, and he ends up having they only live for a year and he ends up having a baby. A little boy is born, which is Mark's brother. So one of the cool things about episode 4, to kind of piggyback off what you're saying, is at the beginning of this episode, Mark throws a fucking bitch fit at his dad. Mm-hmm. Like I actually wrote down, Mark throws a bitch fit at his dad in my notes.
Especially when he sees him kiss the girl.
Yes, because she comes up.
What the fuck?
Because from his perspective, he's like, "You're still married to mom. You moved on so quick. It's only been 6 months." And he's like, "Well, it's not the same here as what it is where you come from, Mark. Like, it's, I'm trying to explain the circumstances of these things because they're so different, but I get where Mark's coming from, because it's like, okay, I get that 6 months to these people is literally half of their fucking lifespan. So yes, it's 50 years to her, to his new wife or whatever, but you still know what Earth time is like. Like, yeah, you're not that far removed from Earth time. Like, let's be real here, bro.
Not only that, it's the exact opposite for him, right? Because like, okay, they get attached so quickly. They only live for 1 year. Sure. Okay. That argument's made.
Yeah.
You have already made the argument that you live for thousands of years. So this 6 months, why is this 6 months more important than the 20 years with mom?
Right. Like, you moved on a little too fast for me.
You called mom a pet.
Yeah. So what is this? An insect? Oh, too soon? You know what I mean? Like, I would have given him one of those things. They probably would kick me off the planet, but whatever. Like, I think the whole bitch fit was really well done. And then eventually he hugs his dad, which I thought was like, that's real. That's like real family shit right there. That's the, you're mad at your family member. You're mad at your mom or your dad. You guys have a big argument, a big falling out, a big misunderstanding. And at the end of the day, you still find each other. You find your way back and you feel that you have to still forgive them and move on. Otherwise, like, you'll just be miserable or whatever. Or you'll hold on to that for forever. So I like the moment where he hugs him, but then he still bitches his dad out. Then he's like, I'm leaving. And his dad's like, listen, you can't just leave. Like, I thought he was going to forcibly keep him there. But I like that Omni-Man genuinely seems to have softened, because when he flew off to Mark, I was scared. And Mark said, what are you going to do? Punch all my teeth out again? I just want to say, So yes, in season one, he does punch out all of Mark's teeth. And I have been thinking about this for a while, because every time Mark gets his ass beat, which is basically every single time he fights, the next scene, he's perfectly healed. And I just wish they would say something about it.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I want them to kind of say that Viltrumites heal everything. Teeth, because, you know, humans, if I lose my teeth right now, I have to go get fake ones. They're never growing. Like, unless I'm an anomaly, because there's always anomalies, but unless I'm an anomaly, the teeth that I have in my mouth right now will be the teeth I have until the day I die, or until the day they fall out. And that is it. This is the last set. So I just wish they would say, like, you know, in One Piece, you drink milk and you get your teeth back. It's silly, but I would like it to be explained that Mark, you know, Viltrumites, yeah, it's kind of cool. We just get our teeth back if we lose them. And it only takes like 6 days you know?
Because it doesn't get addressed at all.
It never gets addressed, but he's always in mint condition after every fight, even though he gets his ass beat in every single encounter he ever has. He gets punched in the face and a tooth flies out almost every time, and then a ton of blood, a broken nose, a black eye every single time he fights. So it's like, I get it. He's not really human. He's a Kryptonian. But I just wish that they would, like, just say at some point, like, yeah, Viltrumites heal. Our healing factor is fucking insane. We never sustain permanent damage. It's kind of shown also in this episode when Nolan comes out of nowhere and saves his son from the big black dude who's about to kill him. And then he, like, slices that guy's belly open. But then that guy at the end of the episode comes back and kicks Nolan in the back in his back and breaks his spine.
He's, like, holding his intestines. Like, yes. The guy's literally holding his intestines that are falling out. And like breaks Nolan's spine, like you said. Yeah. When he came back, I was not at all ready for him to come back.
I don't think you could have predicted that at all. I think that would, like, that is one of the craziest things I've seen, because for all intents and purposes, that guy's intestines being outside of his body, that's a kill.
Yeah.
He's like, make sure they're dead. I'm like, bro, like, he did make sure you were dead. He sliced your gut open from the left to the right. You have a smile on your stomach and all of your insides fell out, and you're holding them right now, telling me that I should be making sure that you're dead.
Yeah.
Bro, you are dead. Like, you are dead. I don't know. Like, what do you want from me?
I did everything.
Yeah. Like, that's insane to tell me that, oh, you should make sure that they're dead. I'm like, bro, you fucking are holding your stomach in right now. You're Trafalgar lawing it with Doflamingo. Like, what do you mean?
So it's going to be interesting though, because then the Viltrum guys come down. The one guy that kind of looks like Sinestro, you said his name earlier. I don't remember.
Craig, I think his name is General Craig. Yeah,
he comes down and he's like, you know, your mission, you have to pick up where your dad.
Your dad will be executed.
Yeah. So obviously Mark's not going to do that. And what's going to be interesting, I guess, is maybe season two, part two, is like, Mark is going to try to get a team together to save his dad.
100%.
But like, who the fuck is going to agree to save Omni-Man? You know what I mean? Like, who's going to agree to save Omni-Man? Hate him.
There's only one thing that I think. So there's a couple things that happened in the season that were interesting, but they're so small. And this is what I love about Invincible, because I feel like these plot points will be developed more. There are two things. One, Angstrom, when he captured the Invincible from another verse, I guess, he had him naked and he was questioning him about like weaknesses or something.
Yeah.
I thought that was random, but then he just like left after Mark didn't really say anything. And he left them to the fucking Cecil, whatever, of that verse, or, you know, when he was fighting the underwater Abyss Dweller, as I call it, the Abyss Dweller did like some fucking sonic wave thing at Mark. He did this kind of fucking scream thing at him, and Mark got caught in it and he fucking lost it. Like, he even made a comment. He was like, that sound. And like, he just crippled and fell to the ground. Now, obviously, this is some special creature, but I was like, well, that creature's not dead, for one, right? Like, that creature just got sent. So maybe Mark can be like, I don't know how, but maybe they can try to get that creature, because it seemed to be very durable. Like, it was able to tank a lot. Like, it didn't really get too hurt. And then it did some kind of attack that blatantly just like debilitated Mark instantly. Now, granted, Mark is weaker than his dad and other people, but like, when he said that sound, I was like, okay, like that was like the, you know, they wanted you to get that there was something about that specific. It wasn't just him getting punched in the face. Like, the Viltrumite just beat his ass. You know, the lion guy just beat his ass. This thing did a sound attack at him and it fucking straight up neutralized him. Like, he was no more good until Cecil came in. So I was like, oh, interesting. This season has been talking about weaknesses. And then that whole weird sonic wave thing, I was like, okay, maybe. And then that creature, I thought that creature was going to get killed. When that creature just fell back into the depths, I was like, huh, I wonder if they'll use that again. Also,
bring it back.
Something else I was thinking about, the Shadowverse, which was a very small part of this season.
Oh, yeah, with Night Boy.
Yeah, the Night Boy dude, he was able to access this weird dimension. And like, he's like, yeah, you're trapped here forever. So enjoy that. And, you know, then Mark tricked them or whatever and got him to let him out. But that whole Shadowverse thing, I was like, I wonder if that'll be used again to trap maybe a Viltrumite in there, right? Because, like, you know, as strong, you could be as strong as you want to be, but if you're trapped in a Shadowverse thing, it doesn't matter. You're stuck here, and I'm just leave you here. You'll just fucking die here or whatever, or go crazy, whatever the case may be. But I don't think the whole Shadowverse thing could be used as well. So there's a bunch of things. And before the Viltrumites killed the fucking Thraxans, I was like, when they said there are 44 billion of them, the first thing I thought was, oh, perfect. Mark is going to save their people from the meteor shower. They're going to be Mark's ally. And when Mark has to fight against the Viltrumites, sure, they're not going to be, like, you know, strong like the Viltrumites, but there'll be 44 billion of these creatures helping him, and that might turn the tides. They might come in the last minute on some Game of Thrones shit. I was thinking all these ideas of, like, ways that you could fight the Viltrumites, because, and honestly, when you're watching Invincible, you have to kind of be thinking, how do you defeat these fucking Kryptonian people?
How do you beat them? Because right now, they just seem unfuckwittable.
Yes. They're way too much. In fact, the more we see them, the more I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get, like, how you were questioning in the first hour of this podcast, why do they even need to do this co-op bullshit? You said they could do this in a week. Like, and I laughed at that, but, like, the reality is, yes, they could really take over any planet in a week. They're so ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess it's just, it's a mystery to me how they don't already own the use. Like, I haven't seen any competition for them.
There has to be something that they just haven't revealed.
Like, even that lion race, right? Let's say that lion race is with the shit and they can fucking rumble. At the end of the day, that lion race is part of an alliance with other planets against Viltrumites.
Yeah.
So that tells me that, like, they aren't winning a war with Viltrum. Yep. So I don't understand how at this moment there even are still planets to conquer. Like,
yeah, no, it's very interesting. There's a whole council of people against the Viltrumites. And so that tells you everything you need to know. It's kind of how I feel about meta decks in Yu-Gi-Oh! It's like, you know what deck is the best when every other deck is maining cards to deal with it. Like, you can never say that your deck is the best if it has to main Shadow and Prisoning Mirror.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there was a point where GBs won a YCS, they won a SJC, and they were maining Shadow and Prisoning Mirror. And then people were like, oh, like, GBs were the deck of this format. I'm like, no, they weren't. The deck of the format was the dad deck. It was Dark Arm Return, at the time. Like, it was Dark Arm Return. The problem was, because Dark Arm Return was so overtly the best deck, is what Aizen, going back to Aizen, one of my favorite quotes about him, to Captain Commander, he said, you are the strongest, and if we fought one-on-one, you would likely best me. Like, that's not a hot take. He's like, but the problem is, because everyone knows you're the strongest, and because everyone knows what you can do, it makes it very easy to counter you. And he said, that's why I made this Aran card for the sole purpose, and welcome Wonderweiss, who happens to have the ability Extinguisher, and he absorbed, you know, Captain Commander's sword and all that stuff. And he's like, you think I can only fight with the sword, blah, 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 you know, Bleach. But the Viltrumites are very akin to that in the sense that, you know, it's very clear, like you said, no matter what I think about the lion dude who beat the shit out of Mark and his dad just watched it happen, as strong as they are, they still joined this Galactic Alliance to fight against the Viltrumites. They're not on the same level, you know?
They're just not, yeah.
You got a main deck Shadow and Prisoning Mirror for the Viltrumites.
Yep,
so.
Yep. And it's weird because we're funny. Because I guess it's just at the moment they're, you know, here's the thing. They're probably going to show it. There has to be an active war. There has to be something happening that is holding them back to some degree.
There has to be, yeah.
And not just, but, like, maybe it's this coalition. Like, there has to be something that is not keeping them in check, but slowing them down. Because every individual example of races that we've seen don't come close. Like we said earlier, Alan's whole purpose, first of all, was to become strong enough to even contend with the Viltrumites. That didn't work. And so then his next purpose was to go across the universe, hoping to find someone that could.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
that is,
they are just, they're so much stronger than everybody else.
Yeah.
I just still don't understand, like, these secret ops missions where, like, you have to go there and weaken the planet. Like, why do I gotta do that?
Just go there and take the planet. It seems very silly right now. Right now, it seems very silly. But I do love the show, like, for all of the weird gripes and stuff that we have. Or not even really gripes, but just, like, things that we notice that need better explanation. And I think that we will get it because this show is one of the best at doing it in terms of just, like, explaining what the fuck you're watching. Or, like, what you saw. A scene that might seem like it's harmless or random is not really that in this show. And I love that.
Yeah, it was a lot of nerdy nitpicks. At the end of the day,
yeah,
we enjoyed the show a lot. Just a lot of little nerdy nitpicks. And I'm pumped to see part two. I didn't know part two was out.
It just came out this weekend.
Somebody told me. Yeah somebody just told me, like, it was out. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, Gary didn't know either. I told him today. Because I was like, yo, season two, I didn't know if they were going to be able to follow up season one with how good it was. Season two, these four episodes were fucking crack to me. I loved it. It was like watching a movie. It had the feel, because they're long. They're 50 minutes long. So it took a while to get through the four episodes. Like, I watched three episodes yesterday, and I said, today I'm going to watch the fourth episode, and like, that'll, you know, have me in a mindset for the podcast. But
that's watching crazy. I can't believe you were able to watch the end of episode three and not turn four on.
It was 1 a.m.
That is crazy.
It was 1 a.m. and I was like, I have to wake up for work. And I was like, it ended on such a great cliffhanger that yes, the idea of watching the next one was certainly there. Don't get me wrong. Like, I was tempted, but I said, oh, this gives me a chance to sleep on it. And I kind of love sleep.
How'd you fall asleep, bro? It would have been so hard to fall asleep. It would have been so hard.
You know, and I always say this too.
I'd have been in bed tossing and turning, thinking about it.
I was. I love good cliffhangers. And this is why we have this conversation often on the podcast about how we ingest media. Because Game of Thrones, the way my friend Gary ingested it and the way me and you and most of the world ingested Game of Thrones is very different. He watched it all at once. He binge watched it in a month, not even a month, probably. In a couple of weeks, he watched the entirety of Game of Thrones. And I always use the classic example of Jon Snow being murdered at the end of season 5. And then episode 2 of season 6, he's resurrected. But we dealt with Jon Snow being dead for over a year. And stuff like that, cliffhangers are really, really amazing when you get a chance to like soak them in and not get the reveal or the conclusion of the cliffhanger immediately. Like, I do think there's something to be said about that. Not to like go into a hole, because we have a whole discussion, but like, we talked about this before, but I do think that is so cool how they know at Amazon and at Netflix, they release an entire season or half of a season. They know that you can do one of two things. You can either watch it all at once, or you can watch it slowly for whatever reason, even though there's no real incentive to do that. But like, you could just like, oh, I don't have time. I'm a doctor. I work 23 hours a day or some bullshit. So I have to slow down, and I can only watch one episode every 3 days or something. But whatever way you watch it, the way they shoot it, the way they direct it, or in this case, the way they animate it and direct it, is if you were to watch it 1 week at a time, the way the episodes end makes sense still. And I love that.
Yeah.
Like, I love that I was able to go to sleep on episode 3. And if I didn't watch it for 4 weeks, I still have this like feeling of, yo, Nolan is on his fucking planet and he tricked his son, and I'm waiting to see the resolution to that. Like, that is I don't know, I love that it's written both ways, where if you start the next episode, it's also like, it's fine though. Like, it's not bad if you just went straight from 3 to 4 and you saw the bitch fit that Mark threw at his dad.
Yeah, because I that's what I could not stop. I was like, well, we're watching the next one.
But you also set out to do that anyway when you watched it. You were like, I'm watching all four episodes of Invincible. Like, I'm setting aside 3 hours and I'm doing this.
That is true.
Yeah,
that makes sense, man. That last, real quick on the Game of Thrones note, as impossible as this is, if I were to ever get somebody fresh in the Game of Thrones again, I think I'd be like, all right, listen, between each season, take like a week break.
Yes. Just do it.
Yeah. I know that you won't, but like, you should. Like, after you finish a season, like, take a break for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then watch the next season. Just give yourself a break from it to ingest it and think about it.
To digest a full season of Game of Thrones, 10 episodes that are all an hour plus long, I think that you should definitely take at least a week to just... literally just to reflect on like all the things that you saw, ask all the questions to people who have watched it, and they can like playfully not give you the answers, you know, because like we know everything, but like we'll playfully be like, oh, you just have to keep watching, you know, but like we'll also tell you like, because sometimes one of the things when you first watch a show, this happens with me a lot, I'm sure it happens with a lot of other people, is that you kind of forget people's names and shit. So you start calling like, the mom, the evil mom. And it's like, oh, you mean Cersei. And it's like the dragon queen. Oh, you mean Daenerys, or like the Khaleesi. And like, you start, what's her husband's name? Khal Drogo. So it's sometimes you just need people to talk to you. And once you hear the name over and over and over again, what was the king's name again? Robert Baratheon. It's like, oh yeah, Rob.
I mean,
Robert
this episode started, I said, I don't remember the mom's name.
Yeah.
You said Debbie. And then every time after that in this episode when I referred to her, I called her Debbie.
Right.
But it's hard to like remember that just after watching it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you binge it.
And sometimes you do need to have a conversation for your brain to like put things together.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, humans learn by repetition. So if you kept watching Invincible, but you only watched it once a week, every week, and this happened over the course of years, you'd never forget her name. Because you'd have talked about it, you'd have heard her name repeated gradually, as opposed to in a short span of 3 or 4 hours where you watched all of Invincible at once, right? And you kind of forget. After we watch, like, I'm going to watch these next 4 episodes, because we could do the next podcast episode could just be like the second half, just to like wrap this whole thing up and then go back to like Dragon Ball and Yu Yu Hakusho and stuff. But I was thinking like, man, this is so, so good, but we're like kind of quickly breezing through it. And it's fine. Like, it's fine. It's fine that, like, you know, Invincible is so good, but we're going to kind of forget about it. After we finish season 2, we're kind of going to just go back to whatever we were doing prior to watching.
You know, it's kind of like, so funny. It's full circle. It's like when someone dies.
It is.
You think about it. It's a big thing that's like, but eventually You just move past it and you're going on to the next part of your life.
Until something reminds you of it again. Yep. You're absolutely right.
We just compared people dying and then
I mean, it's kind of true though. All right. Before we get out of here though, I do want to do one quick little thing because we have some listener letters and two of them have Invincible in their title. So I wanted to go over at least these two listener letters and then we'll do the other ones in another episode. But one is from Austin, one's from Josh. So this one, it is funny because it's just the title is Invincible and it has in parentheses breathing. And it actually doesn't have much to do with Invincible because the first line is can't speak much on Invincible since I haven't seen it, but it's on my ever growing list. So there's that. But then he goes on to say, however, on a topic of breathing, there was a line in the first episode of Euphoria where she talked about breathing out every bit of air. That line made so much sense since I can get so lost in thought that I'll forget to breathe. If you ever randomly hear me take a deep breath and your first thought is thinking I'm bored, I probably just forgot to breathe. I became really aware of my breathing since my use of psychedelics, and it's not an awareness I can turn off anymore. By the way, I've given up on trying to think about making sure I'm breathing while trying to sleep. I'll just pass out and let my body just breathe autonomously while I am. So, a couple things on that. You should watch Invincible. It's amazing. And I know that you're one of the people that listens to every episode of the podcast, regardless of if it's a topic that you actually know or not. And I appreciate that because that is just the support that we love and we need. Breathing, though, that came from an episode, I forget which one, it was random, where we talked about how annoying it is when you realize that you're breathing. Yeah. I fucking hate it. Kenny hates it. And like, you don't go back to automatically breathing for a while once you realize that you're breathing. Like when you consciously start breathing, you have to like keep doing it for a while until you just go back on autopilot. I hate it. So you said that because of psychedelics, you've basically became really aware of your breathing and you kind of can't go back to autopilot fully. I think that's interesting. But what I also think is interesting is that the sleeping thing, there have been times where my nose has been stopped up as a kid and I can only breathe out my mouth and I was scared to go to sleep because like, normally when I go to sleep, you know, you want to close your mouth, but when you can't breathe out your nose, you're like, well, fuck, I'll just die if that happens. I was kind of afraid to go to sleep as a kid sometimes because my nose would be so stuffy is what I'm saying. That's just like an interesting thing.
I hate when that happens. I don't have allergies. I don't deal with that as much as Fraser does, but when I do get sick and when you do have your nose all fucking clogged up, going to sleep is really hard. It's just harder to do because you're sick. And it's not that it's hard to go to sleep because you're sick and you feel bad. It's hard to go to sleep because you can't fucking breathe.
Yeah.
And you can't find out how to get comfortable. It's really frustrating. Also, when I wake up in the morning, my nose in the morning is always super clogged. I don't know what it is. I don't know why. I don't know if that happens to everybody. But when I wake up in the morning, I have to like go clear my fucking nose out.
Same.
I usually can't breathe when I wake up. My nose is just like filled with stuff. That's really annoying. Also, side note, when you transition that question to breathing, I was like, Demon Slayer. I thought he was going to start talking about Demon Slayer.
Same.
I was like, all right, like, we'll see where this goes.
Yep.
I don't remember what episode that was either, but it is really funny when the thought of like having to think to breathe happens and then it's really hard because then you go, okay, my body autopilots. I don't have to think about breathing, but then you're not breathing anymore.
And yeah.
Now, like you lose your breath. You're like, what the fuck? And you got to like make yourself breathe
so
until life like makes you able to do it again. I don't know.
Also, Austin, I have the exact same condition that you have where you talked about if you ever randomly hear me take a deep breath and your first thought is thinking that I'm bored, I probably just forgot to breathe. I hold my breath in random scenarios a lot, especially when I'm around people and I'm either talking or just like focused. I hold my breath. And then what'll happen is I'll let out a really deep breath or do a really deep breath and a person will think that I'm either exhausted or annoyed with the situation or something. And it's just like, no, I just wasn't breathing for the last actual minute. Like for the last 60 seconds I was holding my breath unintentionally though, because when I get really focused I just kind of tend to hold my breath. I do it when I'm working out sometimes. I know all of these things are bad and I try to control it when I notice it, but sometimes I don't notice it. Like the same way I breathe without thinking about it often, most of the time, the same way sometimes I just like forget to breathe and I'm holding my breath for no reason at all. So I have that exact same condition. Okay, so that's Austin's. The next one is by Josh, Joshua Quest, and it says Invincible Spire Slaying. So he says, howdy, Captains. It's been a while, but since y'all just did two topics that I love back to back, I just had to write in. First, thanks for helping me rethink the way I play Slay the Spire. There's so many little things I never considered. I said it all in the episode discussion channel on the Discord for anybody who wants to read it. Also, second, Kenny's absolutely right. Omni-Man wouldn't even know Homelander existed. I also talked about the ease with which he dispatches the Guardians of the Globe in the comics in the same channel. I'd also like to point out that y'all made that insect analogy, and I'd like you to remember that for season 2. Thanks for all the laughs and fun. So I guess that we kind of just talked about. So Josh is referencing our Invincible episode for season one and this listener letter. He's talking about our season one listener letter or season one episode of Invincible discussion that we did. And yeah, so the insect thing is interesting because
again, that's definitely on purpose, right? Because like that, and I feel like it's definitely on purpose that Omni-Man is so like flippant and disregarding of like other life and everything like that. And his time spent with these people and them being pets. And then he ends up, I don't know if he's actually fallen in love, but he at least cares for a race of insect people that their lives are even more insignificant, right? Like that has to be on purpose.
Yeah. He even says like, why do I care? What's wrong? He chokes his son while asking that question, which was so violent for no. It was like, bro, do you guys literally just communicate with violence? But yeah, he chokes Mark, like literally chokes the shit out of Mark too. And he's like, why do I care about these people? You know, like, why do I give a fuck? They don't even live long. What does it matter if they die? And so that whole thing is really good. But I think you're right, though, Kenny, that like it's by design. It's on purpose that he gets a different perspective by seeing what it's like to live with somebody who only lives for a year.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and read what you said about Slate Aspire, Josh. But or you could elaborate on another listener letter. We're always down for that, too, because it's probably been a while. This listener letter was written on February 13th. It is now March 18th. So it's been over a month since you wrote this. But Slate Aspire, I've been learning a shit ton in the last 2 months. Since playing the game, and I love it. I have hundreds of hours in the game now, like at least 200 hours. As I'm climbing the ascensions, it has just been, it's just funny. Like when some of my runs come to an end, they come to an end more and more often now because of the higher ascensions, but some of them come to an end so random and I'm just like, what the fuck just happened? Like I was doing so good. I thought that this was the run and I'll just go into a boss and out of nowhere, I'm getting hit for 56 and I can only block 24 of it. I'm like, oh, I'm just actually fucking dead. Like it happened today. It happened today. I thought my run was going amazing. It was going so well. I thought everything was great. And then I just got hit.
I've had so many runs like that where it's like, it's all, everything's good. Why am I, why did I lose?
Yeah.
Or sometimes you have a run. I've had runs where it feels really good. Like my deck feels good. Everything feels fucking good. But then like I get to the boss of that act. I'm like, oh, I have 11 health.
Yeah. Like, well, that's what happened. Like, the bronze automaton just, he does the hyper beam thing. And I just did not, I wasn't ready for it. And I drew 4 strikes or some shit, or 3 strikes and the survivor and something else. And I was like, really? This hand, when he's doing 56, and I like, it was so bullshit, bro. It was so bullshit, but I got pieced. I was like, all right, well, that run's over. I thought the run was so good, though. I had Akibato, I think it's like whatever it's called. It gives you 8 attack on your first attack. And I had Ravage with knives or something, whatever it's called. It's a 2-drop silent thing that it does 4 times 5.
Oh, Riddle with Holes.
Riddle with Holes. I called it Ravage with Knives. That was crazy. But I had Riddle with Holes, and I ended up getting the Akibato thing. So a lot of my fights were like I got Akibato early. I fought Gremlin Knob, and I went to the fight and did that. I upgraded it, so it did 20 base. And then with the Akibato thing, it did, like, way more than that.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And I drew it in my opening, and I did Riddle with Holes on Gremlin Knob, and he went down so far that on the next turn, he died. It was just a 2-turn fight. And mind you, this is Act 1. This is like the beginning of Act 1, too. And I was like, God damn. Like, I just killed Gremlin Knob in literally 2 turns. He didn't even get to do anything. So I thought that run was running. It was running really smooth. My first card that I got was Envenom. Like, Envenom was the first. I started off with get a rare card for losing 6 max HP. I got Envenom. I upgraded Envenom, so it only cost me 1. The run was going so well. And then, like, I got the Bronze Automaton, and he just hyperbeamed me to death. And I was like, oh, wow. That, from, like, doing so well to just literally deaf out of nowhere. And I was like, okay, I guess I, yeah.
Yes, that's it.
But yeah, the Slate Aspire is amazing. Invincible is amazing. And I cannot wait to watch these next 4 episodes. I'm really excited about it. So I appreciate the listener letter.
Next 4 episodes. And then I'm also excited for one day. We're going to do another Slate Aspire podcast. It'll be the Ascension 20 podcast.
Yes. I'm at Ascension 19 with one character. And for some strange reason, instead of doing it to get to Ascension 20, I just haven't. And I don't know why I do this. I've been doing every other character except the Ascension 19 character. I literally have not gone back to it.
You know why. You do it in everything.
I do it in everything. But like, what's wrong with me? Like, why do I have a complete... It's weird. On weird occasions, I'm a completionist. Mm-hmm. And then on other occasions, I refuse to complete something. And I don't understand that about myself. I'm so weird in that way. I get to the end of video games very often, and I won't complete them. But then I get to the end of Final Fantasy VII Remake, and I'm like, I want 100% this game. And I do it. So
it's very strange.
I'm not really sure what's...
You got to do your A20 heart runs.
I do. Well, it's just something about the finality of it. I think that because I'm enjoying the game so much, the idea of like, because I know what happens with me. I do know this much. Like, if I know nothing else, once I do complete A20 with every character, I will not want to play the game. Because that's just how I, like, I have had no real desire to play Final Fantasy VII Remake after I got 100%. I didn't play it a day after that. Even though I had so much fun playing that game, I unlocked Gato Damarong, which made the game so much funner, just starting every battle with full limit break and then just going to full limit break every single second. That is an amazing thing. And it's really fun to play like that. But like, once I saw the 100% thing, I was like, well, I don't really want to play the game anymore. And Slay the Spire is like, it definitely has a replay mechanic that is stronger than most games. Like, it's up there in terms of replayability. But once I do A20 with all four characters, for sure, I'm not going to be like, I just want to play Slay the Spire again until they add like five more ascensions to it. Like, I will not just want to, for no reason, just play Slay the Spire anymore. That's just how I am with anything that I complete to that degree. So it's partially the fear of like the finality of getting to the very end and never touching a game again. And don't get me wrong, I still have to get there with several other characters. Only one of them is at A19. The other ones are like A15 and shit like that. So I'm still, I still have room to climb.
It's hard. Yeah, I really enjoy doing A20 runs. I only have it on two characters. I only have it on Ironclad and Silent. My Defect sucks.
Defect is the lowest ascension for me right now. Defect is like 13. Defect is 13.
I have a hard time climbing Defect. It's not just you.
I think Defect is hard. I think that this might be a hot take because I know there are some pros out there who are like way better. And I'm speaking from a place of somebody who's played the game for literally like 2 to 3 months now and only has like literally 250 hours maybe. But coming from my limited perspective, Defect runs feel more luck-based than the other ones to me. They feel more dependent on what you get than all the other ones. Like, I feel like I can play well with Ironclad, with the Silent, and with the Watch. I feel like I can play correctly and I can misplay, and that matters. With the defect, a lot of the times I feel like I'm at the mercy of, I hope this lightning bolt hits the guy who has 2 HP right now so I don't take 9 damage for no fucking reason at all. Like, stuff like that, on top of like how swingy his runs are in terms of the card quality you get. Like, literally every run I get electrodynamics feels so much easier than the runs where I don't get electrodynamics. Like, your lightning hitting everybody. It was not close. Your lightning hitting everybody, as opposed to your lightning hitting randomly. For me, a person who hates random, it's a big deal. It changed the entire way I played the entire run. And like, a lot of other things contribute to that. Echo Form. Like, Echo Form runs are a joke. Like, there's so many things that make runs so skewed. And then this is true with all the characters too. Like, I got Fee with the Ironclad and it made the run a joke. But I feel like in general with Ironclad, with Silent, with the Watcher, those characters play the way they play always, I feel like, for the most part. Like, I always kind of do my thing with them. Whereas I don't know what I'm getting into with the Defect. I just don't.
Yeah, I think maybe I just don't understand. Because like, with Ironclad and Silent specifically, they're the two characters I'm most comfortable with. They're the two characters I have at A20. I feel like whenever I'm offered a choice, I have a really good idea on like, maybe not what the best one is, but like what one of the best choices is. Like, one of the best cards. Like, whereas the Defect, I don't know. Maybe I just don't understand the value of some cards as much. You know what I mean? Like, maybe there's some cards that like I'm not picking that I should be picking more.
Yeah, I will say this. He is the character that goes infinite the quickest and like probably the easiest. I have done most of the runs that I've completed with the fucking character randomly have gone infinite. Like, when I say infinite, I don't mean literally I'm taking infinite turns. I mean, in the sense that I will never be damaged again, ever again. Yeah. And like,
when it happens, it feels good.
I won't even come close to being damaged though. I will have, like, I sent you guys a screenshot, I think, my last run with him. And I literally had 10 fucking orbs slots. They were all filled with Glacier, like, with the Blizzard things. And they all had the number 11 next to them. So, like, that's 11 blocks.
You can't lose. You literally can't lose. And that's the thing you were saying about him, though. I think that's, maybe it's not true, but it feels true to me.
Yeah.
Where the Defect, I feel like when I win a run with him, I don't ever have a close run with him.
Yep.
I either obliterate the run, or I lose in act one.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like every time I use them. Like, yeah, his runs are very obliterate. Whereas like the Ironclad and Silent, I've had runs where like I'm literally like on the edge. I do win, but I'm like on the edge. It's really close. Whereas I don't really have close runs with Defect. I either like blow it the fuck out or I just die.
Yeah. I I feel very similarly with the defect. The runs that I have with him where I win, they're just, it's zero diff. Like, I'm not even, you can't possibly hurt me. It's like, I've gotten so much cool headeds and just nonsense going, and my orb management is just so high. And it's like, yeah, this is just over. I don't know what to tell everybody, but all the things that I fear, I'll think like, oh God, this fight with this intangible creature that goes in and out of intangibility every turn. I'm like, oh, this is a bad fight. This could be, then I end up with like 67 block. Then I end up with 118 block because I have calipers. Then I end up with 200 block because I have calipers. And I'm like, okay, never mind.
Yeah. And like, ice stack with calipers is like,
that's what happened in that last run I sent. It was like, bro, this run, I could tell that this is a run that could beat the heart. Like, it could beat the heart probably at any level too, because it's so, I had so much block. Like, it was, it was to the point, 10 orbs, 11 block at the end, and it's not going away. I was like, I can't imagine that this thing is going to do anything that's like, unless it does something that literally says calipers doesn't work now. Like, it literally doesn't, like, that specific relic, it puts an X on it.
Like, nope.
But before this becomes a full-on Slay the Spire podcast, as it's slowly transitioning,
let's rat.
Let me give a shout out to the people on our Patreon, as always, who have supported us, especially you guys at the party member higher tier. Thank you so much. But for everyone who's supporting us, there's like 120 plus people at this current time on our Patreon. We are very appreciative. Don't forget, there's a special tournament on April 6th, Edison Elementals. In that tournament, you're only able to use one attribute in your entire main deck, side deck, extra deck. Your whole deck has to be one attribute. So check that out, April 6th again. But yeah, in the meantime, we have Connie, the Cult of Volvi, Leon, Quest, Xavier, Hylian, Dimitri Barnes, Father Multiverse, Dom the Goat, Giovanni Avalos, Alex Flamer. Then we have Henri Reynolds, Dan Vrabel, Dennis Milburn, Furster Holm, Mitchell Nouse, Vince Marquette, Dallas Bailey, KJ, Roz Weiss, Agents Over Tengu, Sarah Maria, Alex Ahern, Philip Campa, Edison Club, Kyle Batelho, Guac is Extra, Sugal, Vicky Venomon, Elijah Barfoth, Tyler Tadeo, Volvi the Mega Monarch, Enrage Peacock, Janitor 215, Thomas Rude, Joshua Carroll, Eric Chai, Brian Moore, Ty P336, The Soul King Baby, Gingerilla, Puke, Michael of the Illuminati, and ENT Collectibles, I'm Just a Little Nasty Sometimes, Frozen Go Dojo, Anti, Did Nothing Wrong, David Villarreal, Nextastic, B-Dog 23, Felipe Glenn, Hershey Bar, and Poister, Romeo, Junk Synchron, Snipe, Tyler Fresher, B-Man, Sasha Egger, Daniel Anderson, Owen Tedford. I should have let Kenny do his half. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Noah,
bro, Mahody. Are you bored today?
I accidentally overshot it, and now I'm realizing
about to start talking. You said Tyler Tadeo, and then like you kept going, and I was like,
I literally overshot and then I
was
this.
Looking around, I was like, is he okay? Like
after I got to certain point, I'm like, why am I so out of breath right now? Noah Mowdy or Modi, Chicken Toaster Strudel, yeah. I think that, okay, Jordan Eastman and Robert Light. Again, thank you guys so much, especially the last three who I believe are relatively new, if not actually new.
You were just rocking. I was going to let you finish. It was unintentional. I was just going to say, like, I was like, fuck me, I guess.
No, that was unintentional. I got to Tyler and Elijah Barfoth, where I usually stop, and I just kept going, and I got to, like, Sasha Egger and realized I've never said these names before. Like, I've never said, because I was like, having a hard time pronouncing them. You know how after a while you get used to pronouncing the names? I was like, I don't know how to even say some of these. Like, my mind is not ready to say, like, Tyler Frasher until I got to it. So, anyways, guys, as I always say, do the things that make you happy, including enjoying Invincible Season 2, the first four episodes. And we're gonna pick this up with the next four soon. So be on the lookout for that. If you haven't seen Season 2 yet, definitely check it out. It's amazing. And that's pretty much all I got. Until the next one, we will catch you later. Peace. Thank you.